a star more than an actor. I'll do anything to be a star.
He thinks he's the star of Hollywood's next hit.
I'm looking at me as another Jackie Chan.
Parker?
He's really the victim of the greatest practical joke of all time.
We'll go again right away.
Windy City Heat, a new Comedy Central original movie, premiering tonight at 9.
Yeah! Let's rock and roll and make this movie number one!
And who's behind the big joke? The usual suspects. Adam Carolla.
I don't have a TV show anymore.
Carson Daly.
Call my agent and make a decision.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
There's going to be a lot of nudity.
And Jimmy Kimmel. Comedy Central's new original movie.
Can I go to my trailer and go to the bathroom?
Windy City Heat. Premieres tonight at 9, only on Comedy Central.
Welcome to Willow Canyon at Cedar Crest Horror Weekends. I'll be your guide. Now, it's a very narrow canyon and the fog is dense, so watch your step. No! Never underestimate the appetite of these mutated beasts. And whatever you do, don't lose me. I know the way out. I can help you. These creatures are almost human.
Monster Fun is back at the world's best amusement park. And this year, it's bigger and better than ever. Dare to enter new Werewolf Canyon, an extended fright zone, and three haunted houses. Plus, ride your favorite monster coasters like Top Thrill Dragster and Millennium Force.
Okay, all right. We're almost to the exit. Please, you go first, and I'll just wait.
It's your last chance to scream in the park every Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday through October 26th. Halloween weekends at Cedar Point. Monster Fun.
See the Ghastly and the Ghostly at Halloween weekends and save $10 on Saturday and Sunday admission at participating Meijer stores.
Hey, Studley, I don't come to you for advice very often, but I'm hooking up with my girlfriends later and nobody knows where to hang out.
What are you looking for?
Oh, I need a cool place, cash. Laura loves football, so they got to have a game on. Nice waiters, good eats.
Okay, go on. I can't believe this is a club.
We don't get together very often, so we got to do some clubbing, we got to shoot some stick, and we got to have a few ice-cold ginger ales. You know, girls.
Trudy, do I need to spell it out for you? Think about what you just said. Casual, good food, great staff, pool, darts, drinks, a place where you can't avoid...
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much, Malcolm. It's a pleasure to be here with you as the right wing continues to disintegrate. It's kind of like, I remember the Wizard of Oz, the Wicked Witch of the West just began to disintegrate into this puddle. And you might say, yeah, what about Arnold? You know, well, what about Arnold? Governor Gangbang, he made it all. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine a Democrat having that kind of history as Arnold Schwarzenegger had and being able to survive? Well, the big story, of course, is Rush Limbaugh. Admits that he is a pill-popping junkie. The top spokesperson for conservative politics in America, a lying, racist, pill-popping junkie, and a hypocrite of the first order. Now, why spend any time with this guy? He speaks to the, you know what, to the angry white men of this country. Why the hell they're angry? I have no idea. Well, I do, some. But why it expresses it in terms of this brand of politics that benefits only the ultra-wealthy and the ultra-powerful, that's way beyond me. Why the ordinary middle-class or working-class guy finds anything that Rush Limbaugh says to be intriguing. Well, actually, I do know. What, here's Rush Limbaugh and his clones, you know, like Sean Hannity and the rest of these characters, what they do two things. Conservative Republican politics are in a polemic against reality. They're in a strong argument against reality and also against the dominant liberal ideology. That is to say that Elvis Costello said it. You know, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Well, this is the argument against peace, love, and understanding. And what Rush Limbaugh does every day and the rest of these characters is they affirm people's worst instincts. That's why they're so toxic to our community. That's why they continually bring up race. That's why they make fun of women. That's why they make fun of gays. Because rather than understanding that we have an enormous amount of differences between all of us based on gender and race and age and any number of other things, even, you know, religion, culture, all of that, rather than just saying, look, it's a big country, got lots of people, it doesn't have a homogeneous character to it that, say, like Sweden does or something like that, and try to figure out how to get along. Guys like Rush Limbaugh and his clones, what they want to do is make a fortune manipulating the worst impulses of people in our country. So that's why I always say they're toxic to our communities. Just when it looks like we're going to start getting along, of course, they'll just come in there with some just a vile remark about somebody. And remember, these are the people, though, when you say, what's wrong with the world? Now, if you ask me, if you ask the average American, what problems do we have? List the problems. In fact, you know, I'm the public affairs director for WRIF, and one of the things that I do in different ways, we do this ascertainment. That is just, you know, less fancy language. Figure out what you think are pertinent and important community concerns. And you tick them all off, and we do it at different times. Sometimes, I hate to say it, because we want to get, you know, we want to get a sort of an, so you're not really aware where let me just say we get it from you. Sometimes you don't even know it. And, I mean, it's not sneaky. I'm not doing anything dishonest. And so you run by all these problems, and it's about our economy. It's about the war in Iraq and, the lies about that, the failure of the peace that gets worse and worse, and more Americans are getting killed. 1,700 Iraqi civilians have been killed since Bush declared an end to hostilities. And how many, what is it of American soldiers getting up towards 100? Everything, potholes, taxes, crime, race, all of this. You ask Rush Limbaugh, what's wrong with this world? Poverty, hunger, AIDS, other rampant diseases. You ask Rush Limbaugh and these clones, what's wrong with America? What's wrong with the world? One thing only, liberals. If it wasn't for liberals, everything in this world would be perfect. Of course, he's a multimillionaire. We'll see if, hopefully he's saved his money and not blown it all on drugs, right? Sure was buying an enormous amount of it. So he lives in a $30 million home. That's right, I didn't misspeak myself. A $30 million home. His last contract was worth $200 million. So he is in the 1% of the 1% of ultra-wealthy in this country. And he looks out for their interests. He hobnobs with them. He brags about golfing with George Bush. I got to tell you, in fact, you can go to my website, peterwerby.com. That's PETERWERBE.com. Last name, WERBE.com. And there's a Bush countdown clock. How many more days Bush has in office? And it really goes to January 20th, 2005. All right? And where was I off on that? My website. Let's go back to Rush. All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And on that day, when they inaugurate President Dean or President Clark, you know, Howard Dean or Wesley Clark, when they inaugurate one of those two men to become the president, and for some reason or other, they say to me, hey, get that guy in Detroit here. I want to play a round of golf with him. Well, I mean, there's two problems. First off, I don't know how to play golf. But the other thing is, I would say, I don't think so. I don't think I want to play golf with you, President Dean or President Clark, because that would so compromise my standing among my listeners, because they would know I was just pimping for you. I wouldn't say it quite like that to them, but I would say I want to remain outside of the political stream so I can I can retain a criticality. If I'm going to go sleep at the Lincoln bedroom the way Rush Limbaugh bragged about, if I'm going to brag about having played golf with the president, how critical do you think I'm going to be of my buddy? What do you think? Well, why bother with Rush Limbaugh at all? Because it's very typical of the spokespeople from the for the conservative movement. They're a pack of hypocrites. They're a pack of liars. Everything they accuse the ordinary person of doing, they're up to their necks in it so frequently. And this is just the most egregious example of it. Now, Steve writes in to nightcall@wrif.com. That's our email address here, nightcall@wrif.com. He says, remember what Ozzy said. That's Ozzy Osbourne. For, you know, some of you may not know that. And who used to sing with Black Sabbath. And here's what Ozzy said. I used to have a drug problem. Now I have enough money. Get it? I used to have a drug problem. Now I have enough money. That was his problem. They didn't have enough money to get the drugs that he wanted. Now, the same thing was true with Rush Limbaugh. He has no drug problem. The only time he realized in the saccharine admission publicly that he had a drug problem is when he had already been exposed. If all of a sudden he would have come on the radio, say, like a month ago or 2 months ago, and said, people, I want to tell you this. I have a real serious problem. Like 10 million other people, I'm addicted to prescription drugs, and I have myself in a real jam. And I'm going to work to get out of it, and I'll be back in a month. I actually would have had some grudging respect for him. Grudging because he's such an awful man. He does such damage to our nation and to our communities. But at least I would have said, well, you know, everybody gets themselves in a jam. There's 10 million other people. There's more people addicted to prescription drugs and all the heroin, cocaine, crack, and, you know, all those other drugs you can get addicted to put together. This is a major problem. This is not a problem for the police. This is a rightly so, a health problem. This is something that doctors should deal with. And in that sense, Rush Limbaugh is moving in the right direction. Except, here is a man that has advocated that people that do drugs be put in jail. And there he is, having his housekeeper sneak around and make these buys and buying thousands of these baby blues. Now, let me get back just a little bit, and I'll get you on the air at 313-298-WRIF. A couple of things. We're asked now to have compassion for Rush. Well, where the hell is the compassion he ever showed for anybody? That doesn't mean we shouldn't show compassion. And one should have a compassion for anyone who's suffering. And he's suffering. But you have to ask a few questions. How does this drug addiction that he has, this massive drug habit, affect what he's saying? And maybe that's one of the reasons that he says so many things that aren't true. There's a whole book called Rush Limbaugh's Reign of Error. Not opinion. You can say Bill Clinton. I think Bill Clinton is the biggest jerk in the world. But if you repeat things factually, consistently in error, one begins to think that you have no interest in purveying the truth, but only a political opinion. And a political opinion that benefits other ultra-wealthy people like yourself. Now, here's what he started his remarks with. Oh, by the way, people think this is a tragedy. What about the other 10 million people? Why aren't they a tragedy as well? Why don't they have the ability to go off to these clinics to detox? Yeah, well, in Greek... of your life and how that compares to what, you know, the treatment, actually this admiration that Rush Limbaugh is getting. Here's what he says. You know, I have always tried to be honest with you and open about my life. I need to tell you today that part of what you have heard and read is correct. I am addicted to prescription pain medication. Now, this is just in this first sentence. You know, I've always tried to be honest with you and open about my life. That's not true at all. He says some years ago that he had spinal surgery. The surgery was unsuccessful. I continued to have severe pain in my lower back, also in my neck due to herniated discs. I am still experiencing that pain. Let me see if I can find this interview with him real quickly. Oh, yeah, he's being interviewed in July 2003, this year, about the American Century Championships. He's talking about how he's played all these golf tournaments. And the Bob Hope three times, AT&T twice. He said, it wasn't bad. It was just that the game is mental. It had nothing to do with physical characteristics, the fact that he didn't do that well. There's nothing wrong with me. So when is he telling the truth? Is he telling the truth when he says he has severe back pain? That's why he's addicted. Or is he telling the truth when he said there's nothing physically wrong with me? And is there a one of you out there that doesn't believe that the reason he made this public pronouncement is he knows his ass is grass? That the Palm Beach police have initiated an investigation and he could very well be indicted? And this, like he supported a preemptive war based on lies, this is another preemptive strike to keep his butt out of jail? Why is this admirable? This man without a bit of compassion. This man who laughs at Daryl Strawberry's problems, at Kurt Cobain's problems, who said, do I have all this? Who said that Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead said he had wasted his life because of drugs. I'll find it as we go along. So this is a man without compassion for anyone. You know, they have to make up this phrase, compassionate conservative, because it's almost like an oxymoron. You know, it's a contradiction in terms. No one would say, let's have this phrase, compassionate liberal. People think of liberals as compassionate and tolerant. People think of conservatives as mean-spirited and punitive. So that's why they, you know, Bush made up this phony category. Now, here's what Rush says about drugs. He's talking about, and someone says to him, well, you know, more African-Americans go to jail for drugs disproportionately than whites. And he says, what this says to me is too many whites are getting away with drug use. Too many whites are getting away with drug sales. Too many whites are getting away with trafficking in this stuff. The answer to this disparity is not to start letting people out of jail, because we're not putting others in jail who are breaking the law. The answer is to go out and find the ones who are getting away with it. That's him. Convict them and send them up the river, too. Well, that'd be your butt, Rush, if we follow your deal. He said, if people are violating the law by doing drugs, they ought to be accused, and they ought to be convicted, and they ought to be sent up. That's what the man says. Now, he also tells the truth, right? Here is a, what does he say here? You know, I've always tried to be honest with you and open about my life. Well, you know, he's 100% deaf in his left ear and 80% deaf in his right ear. He didn't tell anybody that. He went on with the program. Never, you know, I want to be honest and open about my life. And instead had, I was listening to a show a couple of years ago, and there'd be these big pauses. Well, he was reading the screen, and then what they had for him, because he couldn't hear a damn thing, they would have flash a light, like a green light if it was one of his slavish worshipers. If it was somebody who was hostile, it would have a red light. So that was another lie as well. And people thought, this poor guy, you know, maybe he, you know, maybe we don't agree with him, but, you know, he's suffering. He's hurt himself. Now, it turns out that research has found that abuse of opiate-based painkillers like OxyContin can lead to profound hearing loss caused by damage to the inner ear. Yeah, that's right. So these downers, these baby blues, this OxyContin that Rush Limbaugh took could very well have caused his deafness. This is not an admirable man. He ought to take his hundreds of millions and retire from public life. Get somebody on the air that has good things to say about other people. You say, well, gee, Pete, you're not talking very nice about the Rushster. Well, it's okay. Not like they're not human beings, but it's okay, to take pot shots at politicians. I don't have any problem with that. But I'm talking about the kind of racist remarks that he makes, the homophobic remarks that he makes, the derogatory remarks he makes about people trying to make this world better, on and on like that. All right. Now, this is hard to believe. Here's what Stephen from Dearborn Heights wrote into Night Call at WRIF.com. Maybe I shouldn't have been so hard. If I had read this first, remember I was talking about sucking up to people? So, I mean, it's not like Rush Limbaugh sucking up to power. He's got probably more money than Bush. Here's what Stephen writes. You made the big time on Wednesday when Flush Limbaugh mentioned your site, PeterWerby.com, within the first 10 minutes of his show. It was a day after Arnold, that's Governor Gangbang, won the California election, and Limbaugh was at his best criticizing Democrats. For some reason, Limbaugh was telling his listeners that if they wanted to see how pathetic Democrats have become, they should visit democraticunderground.com. Yeah, definitely see that, democraticunderground.com. These are people, you know, Democratic Party activists, which I am not, democraticunderground.com. And according to Stephen, he then went on to name a few of the links on that page, and my name was mentioned. This is amazing. No wonder, I was thinking, all of a sudden I got this rush of hits. To use a verb. Hey, something can peter out, something can rush, you know, whatever. Perhaps some of your listeners also heard that broadcast. Because of his recommendation, I visited your site, and now I'm more informed than ever. Thank you, Rush. He says, I only listen to his show from time to time to get a laugh. Well, I can't listen to it for more than 5 minutes because, you know, I'm in this business of critical thinking about, about the statements that are made, about the world and the issues. So I would say that every time, other than saying it's Tuesday or something like that, almost everything in my estimation that Rush Limbaugh says either is an out-and-out lie, has faulty assumptions, or something to it that by the time I've, every clause. So he said one sentence, and my mind's gone, no, that's not true. Like, and then he's on to the next one where, you know, another statement of BS. Now, somebody, you know, people say they've seen my site. Again, if you're just joining us, PeterWerby.com, PeterWerby.com. And there's lots of great stuff on there. Starting off, oh, yeah, we're going to be talking at 1 a.m. with Greg Palast. You can go to GregPalast.com, P-A-L-A-S-T, GregPalast.com. He's going to be talking about Governor Gangbang's win in, I didn't bring this. I was going to bring, I can get to this. I'm getting confused here. Anyway, Greg Palast at 1 a.m. Also, it's Columbus Day tomorrow, and here's what I wrote on here. When the Arawak people, soon to be exterminated, rushed out to greet the strange sailors from a distant shore, they bore gifts and offered a welcome to the astounded Christopher Columbus and his crew. That night, the intrepid explorer from Europe wrote in his diary, quote, they, the Indians, will make fine servants. With 50 men, we could subdue them all and make them, make them do what we want. Yeah, I've got two. Make them do what we want. And I ask, Happy Columbus Day? And you can read historian Howard Zinn on Columbus being discovered by the Arawaks. Arawaks were then exterminated, of course, by the Spanish. Head conservative, a stoner. Pig Boy Limbaugh, that's what he's called often. Right-wing racist, multimillionaire, flack for the Bush mob, and Chicken Hawk. Another guy loves wars, except he got out of it. And if you go to the site, you can see whether Rush is a perfect a-hole or not. Because that's how he got out of, the war in Vietnam. So lots of other stuff on here as well. All right. We'll get to that. Let's get to some of your calls right now. I'm Peter Werby. I'm at 313-298-WRIF. I'd like to hear from you, including your own experiences with OxyContin and how you feel about, Rush Limbaugh's experience. And what makes him different from the 10 million other people addicted to painkillers and other addictive prescription drugs? Hi, this is Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. I call not to praise Mr. Limbaugh, nor to bury him, but to apologize to you.
Right, what's that? Why?
Well, last week I called up and defended him, saying that we did not have all the facts, and at the time we did not.
Yeah.
We still don't, truly. The one thing I will say in his defense is that his doctor's already said that it was an autoimmune disorder, and he said that since.
He says that it was not an autoimmune disease.
No, he said it, the doctor said, yes, it was an autoimmune disease that caused the hearing loss.
Which is what, and that's what's triggered by opiate addiction.
Well, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an audiologist. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can only say that the doctor did not say that the addiction was caused for the reason, was the cause for the hearing loss. And he was open about his hearing loss. He did come on the air and say he was basically 90 to 100% deaf. He couldn't hear a thing.
He did later. And wait, it's here. Researchers found that the abuse of opiate-based painkillers like OxyContin can lead to profound hearing loss caused by damage to the inner ear, said Dr. Gail Ishiyama, an assistant professor at UCLA Department of Neurology. But she said she could not confirm that was Limbaugh's case without access to his medical history. Right. Well, he may. Let's say
exactly,
that.
Exactly, which is what his doctor said.
Yeah.
His doctor said it was not opiate abuse that caused the hearing loss. His doctor said it was an autoimmune disorder. But nonetheless.
Well, his lawyer says he's not guilty. You know, come on.
Well, you know, neither was OJ, right?
Well, you know, there is a connection here. A comparison.
Yeah, I'm not gonna explore the connection. You know, that's old news. I watched the Bronco chase Imp while I was in California, et cetera, et cetera. That's old news. What I am gonna say is I realize that you're really having a good time with this.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I can understand it because this man is a conservative icon with a 25 million person audience to include myself. And let me explain something to you, Peter.
Go ahead.
That's not gonna change.
Well,
being in the deep.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that no matter how hypocritical Rush Limbaugh is exposed to be, no matter how many transgressions people like Arnold Schwarzenegger says, no matter how many Republicans do 10 times worse ever than Bill Clinton did and what have you, that they won't change a bit. Because there's a little feature here. You know, I don't want to, you know, I never even graduated college, so maybe I shouldn't go on with psychoanalysis. But there's a level at which the law and order crowd loves transgression. And what psychoanalytic theory would say, ultimately, the anger, the rage that fuels conservatives has this incredible desire to destroy, to hurt, to blast everything apart, but it's extraordinarily repressed. And what it comes out in, of course, is love for the big transgressors, the war makers, the governor gangbangs, the pill popping Rush Limbaughs, who you're absolutely. Absolutely right. He probably won't lose a single listener. And then the hatred and the desire to punish those, below them, you know, the lower classes, the darker classes and what have you. It's really quite sick. But thank you, sir. Thank you for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. I have a question and a comment.
Sure.
Okay, First of all, I've been listening to your show for the past 20 years.
Wow.
Over 20 years.
Wow.
Okay. So I want to ask you a question, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
I make like $220,000 a year. What social class would you put me in?
What social class? Oh,
yeah.
The social class would probably put you the upper middle class.
Okay. Well, I figure I'm in your social class, okay? I mean, when I first started calling your show 3 years ago, I was probably only making like $20,000 a year. But
yeah.
The problem that I have is that why is it that you have this certain class of people, even if they are in my social class,
mm-hmm.
that seem to have a problem with those of us that are making 6 figures or better a year, simply because goes back to like Rush Limbaugh. Everybody's jumping all over Rush Limbaugh because of these so-called comments that he made or what have you. I don't think it's a case of I don't know how to put it. I don't think it's a case of the fact that he's a racist or anything like that. I mean, I've heard Rush Limbaugh on numerous occasions defend certain people, such as, well, Let's go to the racial point of it. Clarence Thomas, I'm sure you remember 10 years ago or whatever it was when 12 years ago when Clarence Thomas was in that big scandal where he had so-called fondled this woman. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, the entire Republican Party, including George H. Bush, was behind him on that one.
Well, and you know, they pick out their conservative Negroes and promote them in a manner that is so disingenuous because it's a party filled with racists. And everyone knows it. Everyone knows it's the Trent Lott KKK party that, when the Nazis go to vote, when the Ku Klux Klan goes to vote, when the Christian Identity people go to vote, they vote for the Republicans. Come on. And here, what do you think about this remark? Rush Limbaugh said, ever notice how all composite pictures of wanted criminals resemble Jesse Jackson? Now, would you call that a racist remark?
Not really, because to me, personally, and I'm gonna tell you something, Pete, you know who you're talking to. This is MD.
MD.
I got tons of black friends, and I'll tell you something. Personally, I think Jesse Jackson's a big jerk. And
well, that's not quite the same thing. If you thinking politically, he's a jerk. How about this? On his TV show that fortunately became defunct, Spike Lee urged that black school children get off from school to see his film Malcolm X, which is a wonderful film. People should get it. I'm sure it's available on video or DVD. And here's what Rush Limbaugh said. Spike, if you're going to do that, let's complete the education experience. You should tell them that they should loot the theater and then blow it up on their way out. There's a pattern here. When he talks about acts, he says acts for ask when he discusses black leaders and what have you. When he used to talk about Carol Moseley Brown when she was a senator, he would play the Moving On Up theme song from the TV's Jefferson. Come on, MD. He's a racist. Everyone knows he's a racist. And what it does, it's the corner of American society that has an official ideology of anti-racism where they can express their little ugly feelings of prejudice and desire for discrimination. And that's his popularity. He knows exactly what he's doing. He gets rich because of a lot of angry white guys' inability to come to grips with what's been happening in this society over the last 30 years. And rather than making that transition into a fairer society, and there's a lot of bumps along the way. But what he has made a fortune on is making those bumps harder and harder and harder. Rather than helping transition, rather than creating the kind of society that we'd all like to have, he keeps stoking those flames of discrimination and prejudice and the problems that we've had. So the problem with America, it's not racism, it's Jesse Jackson. Well, Rush, I hope you're enjoying your rehab.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the RIF Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the RIF on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the RIF Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too. WRIF.com or Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor and Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com. You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with rock and roll tennis pro Luke Jensen. It wasn't long before we all start talking about his brother Murphy.
What's up with your brother? Just because he knocks up Robin Givens doesn't know what it means. That was actually a cheap shot, and I'll apologize for it. Murphy did impregnate Robin Givens. That is true.
Luke's beautiful baby boy, 3 years old.
And is she now your sister-in-law?
She is. No, they are not married.
Are they together?
No, they're not together.
Ooh. Oh. Was it even close?
No. Not even close.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Ritz.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Ritz. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Rip all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Rip Rock band.
Plus, the Rip gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Rip Rock.
Double the Rip Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Rip. From 101 WRIF.
It really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
We'll get back to more Rip Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll.
At WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
I think, by God, Bush can't finish his job. He was aimed to take care of his dad's problems. Didn't finish that in 91. And he damn sure ain't got this sumbitch finished now.
No, no, it's going to take a long time.
I mean, you know what I'd do, hell. I'd split that son of a bitch wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd use him by
Hail. And then with Jerry Garcia, lead guitar of the Grateful Dead. This is what Rush said to say about Jerry Garcia. When you strip it all away, Jerry Garcia destroyed his life on drugs, and yet he's being honored like some godlike figure. Our priorities are out of whack, folks. How about this? You turn it around, and instead of Jerry Garcia, you put Rush Limbaugh in there. Rush Limbaugh destroyed his life on drugs, and yet he's being honored like some godlike figure. Our priorities are out of whack, folks. Well, what if somebody, no one's asked me, do I think that Rush Limbaugh should go to jail? Should he be prosecuted to the full extent of the law? Well, he says yes, right? He believes that, in fact, people should be. That's what he said on his program any number of times. Yeah, send him up to jail. So you would think, well, yeah, you know, let's get you in there, Rush. Here's what Davis said. He wrote into Night Call at WRIF.com. Said Rush never would have spilled his guts had he not been caught with his hands in the cookie jar. He's right about one thing. He is not a role model. He said he wasn't. Flush Rush, he smells, says Davis. Oh, yeah. Well, I can't seem to find this. Here it is. Polls have shown public opinion towards George Bush souring. I can't say that. Souring over his handling of the economy and Iraq. But an item tucked away in last week's CBS News New York Times poll adds insult to injury. Despite three tax cuts in many years, remember, I'm saying it's just for the rich. That's who's getting it. The rich are benefiting, average person, even probably, well, maybe MD who makes $200,000, maybe he's getting a little. But anyways, despite three tax cuts in as many years, only 19% said Bush policies have made their taxes go down. 47% noticed no effect. That was me. 29% perceived that their taxes had gone up. So this was 19% of the population. And in the meantime, we've been driven into debt. This war, based on a pack of lies, is going to cost us tens of billions, maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars. And since Bush has undercut the funding of the government by having the rich not pay taxes, it means every time we spend a dime on Iraq, we're borrowing it. So it's not just $87 billion to go to Iraq for what we would like to see happen in our country. It's $87 billion plus the interest that we're going to be charged from the banks, foreign banks, that the United States government is borrowing it from. Ain't that cute? All right, let's continue onward. If you'd like to call, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call.
Hi, Peter. This is John from Ypsilanti again.
Hi, John. What do you mean again?
Oh, well, I called last week talking about Howard Dean a little bit.
All right. Well, did you hear me talking about President Dean?
I did, just a little bit. I'm actually at work right now, so I only catch about half your show for every show, but I heard you talk about him a little bit. What do you think of him?
Well, anybody but Bush.
Well, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But actually, today I wanted to talk a little bit about old Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, I don't really care if he goes to jail. I don't think anyone should be prosecuted for the disease that is drug addiction.
Sure.
But I do think this. You're totally on the point. He never would have admitted anything, and he thinks that he has some kind of grace admitting this after it was already out, and then he initially basically failed to deny it. He failed knowing about the investigation, but he didn't, you know, deny ever doing it. So now he admits it, and now, you know, woe is me, I'm going to drug rehab, and in 30 days I'll be a new and improved Rush. Well, here's what I have to say. If he's buying those quantities of those drugs, which I've taken a few of, I can tell you right now, 30 days isn't going to do anything for him.
Well,
and when he comes back in 30 days and he's not cured, then he's really going to have his foot in his mouth because he's been talking so much smack about all these drug addicts. And it's not like people are addicted to drugs because they want to waste their lives. It's addictive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's about to realize that full-fledged here.
Well, he said he went through detox twice.
Well, and I didn't even know about that, but
yeah.
I think that just proves it even more. And, you know, like I said, I don't think anyone should go to jail for drug addiction. I think they should legalize marijuana and maybe concentrate on the harder stuff and maybe some international trafficking of heroin or something, but... You know, people need to realize that prescription drugs are just as dangerous as some of the other drugs that we demonize and criminalize people for.
Well, actually, they're more dangerous because they have more people are addicted to them. Thank you, John. Thanks for joining us from Ypsilanti. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see here. Here is Daniel writes in. If Rush Limbaugh purchased large amounts of narcotics from illegal sources, he is a criminal. It is an outrage if he is not prosecuted. The evidence against him is overwhelming. He will probably get a free pass with all that money and Roy Black defending him. That's the attorney. Can you believe that this hypocrite would act like this, could act like he was being such a stand-up guy about all of this? He only confessed and went into rehab because he got caught. That's what John said as well. He has been to rehab twice before and never learned his lesson. I say give Limbaugh the same treatment that he urged for other drug addicts. Lock him up. Throw the key away. You know, I've met a lot of people in the joint. I just got a call from a federal prison where a buddy of mine's been in there for 13 and a half years for a drug offense, and he thought he was going to get out in 6, and he says, I think I'm going to have to do another 8. And he's a model prisoner. He's getting a PhD in psychology and what have you. So the idea that somebody like this friend of mine would be hit his whole or a third of his life taken from him, and Rush Limbaugh because of the power and prestige. I mean, you see what George W. Bush said about him? You know, that's really sweet. Actually, I'm going to have to go to my webpage real quickly here. Rush is a great American, George Bush said of the beleaguered host who has championed the conservative movement for decades. Bush says, I'm confident Rush can overcome any obstacles he faces right now. Well, hell yeah. You know, if you're a housewife strung out on baby blues, you know, you're just going to, your life's going to go down the drain. Rush, he'll probably get off this, come back, and still make, you know, what did he get, $200 million for 9 years. I would have done, I'd do it for like 10% of that, not the drugs, the job. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, this is Carl.
Hi, Carol.
I was, just 2 or 3 weeks ago when Bill Clinton was in Iowa addressing the Democratic crowd there, he made a statement that only 5% of the people really know the nuts and bolts of any of the stories he mentioned about the let me get it, just hang on.
All right.
About the country of Niger, and that they was chopping around, Iraq was chopping around for ore. Of course, that was a lie. And but he mentioned some others, but there was a good activist. That the only sad thing is she's dead now. She said that 5% is a quip. 5% of the people believe the things that are truth. 10% think they know, and the rest, 85%, doesn't know and would rather die than to know, and frequently do.
Well, you kind of lost me in all that, but we'll take it up another time. Thank you, Carl. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Going good.
I just have a quick comment to make.
Sure.
I came in on the conversation when you were talking about all the problems of the world and how it relates to liberals and conservatives. I'm a former Rush Limbaugh listener. I've permanently resigned my status as a centrist. The problems of the world are due neither to conservative nor liberal. I think that it's important to state that the liberal versus conservative argument is one big distraction from the real problem, which is conservative or liberal, Democrat or Republican, they're all members of the same super elite rich groups. And at the risk of sounding like a conspiracy theorist, the goal is one world government, and it will end in one great war, and that will be the war against the Lamb.
The war against what?
The Lamb of God.
The war against the Lamb of God. Well, I don't know if I accept that. I thought you were on the track for something. I mean, this country is run by elites, and sure, and the Democrats certainly aren't going to solve any problems. I mean, one of the major problems is having Bush Co., you know, the Bush Incorporated, turn the whole country over to corporations and erode our rights and what have you. And in terms of any big Armageddon or what have you, well, that's a matter of faith. We don't take it up too much on this show. But the importance of Bush being defeated in 2004, hopefully he'll even leave office prior to that. That's what I'm hoping, that all of these scandals that are beginning to come out, and I mean, it should be enough that he lied about, totally, completely, 100% lied about Iraq, ought to be enough to force him out of office and somehow legally, internationally, pay the cost for the thousands of lives, including hundreds of Americans, that were expended for absolutely nothing. But the idea of having a Democrat win should just give us a breathing a space in order to create the kind of popular-based movements that will begin to address the problems of this world, because the elites never do. By definition, they like things the way they are. It's kind of a big racket. And I mean, Bush, you know, in the last 3 years, in fact, from day one, it's turned it in 100% to a racket. I mean, the Democrats, it's slightly less. Bush said, what the hell? If people stood by and let me steal the 2000 election after I lost the vote nationally and in Florida, and people saw that it was my dad's pals that put me into office and didn't do anything, well, we can just turn the whole country over to corporations, to energy polluters and, you know, the war makers. And once we destroy a country, then we pay our pals to rebuild it. In the meantime, we'll give tax cuts to all our buddies. will tear away at civil liberties and civil rights. You know, will roll back environmental standards, attack workers' rights, attack the middle class, say that we're giving a tax cut to everybody and, in fact, just give it to the wealthy. Well, this will go on. What we need is that not to go on. We need a little bit of a break on that and let the people's movements of resistance, like they always have, extend the idea of a democratic revolution in this country. I'm talking small d. I'm talking about the thing that happened in 1776 that said we don't want to be run by elites. Well, we were run by elites still. This country's always been run by elites. But it's been a process of including more and more people in the decision-making process, and that's what democracy is all about. Well, it's gone 180 degrees the opposite way. It's back towards absolute rule, rule by fear, rule by might, and that's what's got to be stopped. All right, thank you very much. You know, if I knew, hey, Rick Fox, who is our producer and phone screener, do you know how to run, hey, what the hell do you call those, a pool? Yeah. You know how to run, like they have like a football pool or something like that. Like you could say, like we could start a pool of the day that George W. Bush will leave office. Now, he could leave office, like I said, on January 20th, 2005. He could leave office on January 20th, 2009, right, if he got reelected. Or you might say, you know, if you're like I'm getting at, that he's going to leave office on May 31st, 2004, because of criminal charges, impeachment, or something like that. So we could get together a pool and then, you know, and then, like, turn the money over to some worthy cause. Yeah. Yeah. I'll think about that. I'll get it up on my website. Are we going? No, we did line 5. Where are we going now? Line 4. All right. Thank you very much. Those lines are 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werbe. If you'd like to email me, it's at nightcall@wrif.com. Sorry for that, folks, but I have to bring the mic over here. This is from Andrew, listening in Windsor. Thank you for making our show international. He says, last week has been better karma. Everyone that has been slinging the poop is finally downwind. I live in Windsor, just over the bridge. We just voted out the Tories, who are the Canadian Republicans, with a majority vote. We have 4 political parties, and the majority is a big win. The Liberals now run our province and Canada. Most important, Canada is in the process of decriminalization of marijuana. In fact, the Prime Minister, Chrétien, said that when it's legalized, maybe he's going to try it. Huh. Can you imagine? Can you imagine some American politicians saying that? But Andrew says the U.S. is spending millions to try and stop the legalization of marijuana in Canada. I mean, the Canadians understand how destructive, how absolutely destructive these drug laws are. War on drugs, man, I can't even drive on drugs, right? You've heard that before. Let me see, USA is spending millions to stop the threatening Canada and what have you. He says this is because they would have to admit that their war, in other words, the U.S. war on drugs is a failure. Your taxpayers are paying for this. All right, yeah, of course. Another way we're being looted of our tax dollars, trying to stop our neighbors from doing their intoxicant of choice. I mean, if Rush Limbaugh either wants to or can't help himself being addicted to OxyContin, it's not my idea that he belongs in jail. But let all the other drug prisoners out first. You know, put Rush in the joint where he belongs, where he advocated drug violators, drug law violators should go, and then let everybody out. Let him spend about a month, okay? He says, P.S., I love your show. Bill Maher and your show are the only source for this kind of information. Well, Andrew, that's the only thing you say that I disagree with you about. There are so many hundreds, maybe thousands of sources. You can start with my website. You can start with any of the links on my website. And there is a universe of opposition and resistance to the fascists that have control of this country right now. And, I don't know. I mean, this is showbiz. I feel badly in some ways about keep promoting my own website. So I don't make any money off of it. You know, Limbaugh, he's got like a newsletter. I mean, this guy gets $200 million and then, you know, he's selling stuff. Now, I don't get this. When I start getting $1 million a year, never mind. That's, my wife says, yeah, sure. Wait on that. Anyways, let's move on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter. How you doing?
Doing good.
Good. Listen, I've been listening to you for a bunch of years, too, and, you know, with this Rush Limbaugh thing, you know, even though, you know, we don't agree with his politics and we don't agree with the comments that he makes, I mean, you still have to have compassion for the man. The man has a problem. The man's problem was brought to his attention in a hard way with all these exposés from the Inquirer and everything else. You know, maybe when he gets out of rehab, he's going to have be a little bit more tempered and be a little bit more understanding of other people.
Well, maybe. You know, at one point, this is pretty amazing, at one point he was talking about maybe they should legalize drugs. I mean, most of it he's just talking real punitive. Well, listen, I have compassion for everyone. I was talking last week about the whole Buddhist concept of compassion, that you have compassion for everyone that does even awful things, because that moves them away from what they call their Buddhist nature. In other words, their perfect nature. So you can still dislike what somebody's doing or disagree with them and still have compassion for them. But it's hard to work up compassion for a man that has never expressed any.
Well, that's what makes liberals better than conservatives.
Right. Well, you know what? He is just kind of a poor schmuck, except that he's gotten rich off it, and he's been so destructive to the health of our communities.
Yeah, well, I feel that, you know, you guys got to still hope that this guy is going to see the light, and you hope that he's going to change from this.
Well, yeah, I'm looking in Newsweek. There's, let me see if they, I'm looking at this. His $30 million, all right, have compassion, I know. Where do they, yeah, here's how they refer to him. The man behind the curtain is not the god of family values, but a childless, twice-divorced, thrice-married schlub whose idea of a good time is to lie on his couch and watch football endlessly. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But on the other hand, there's, you know, this is like the poor little rich boy. And, well, I mean, what was, there was an old Emerson, Lake, and Palmer song about, something about some rich guy, and then he finally kills himself, you know.
Yeah, I can't remember which, I know what you're talking about, I can't remember it, though.
Richard Corey, isn't that the name of it? Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, at some level, you can feel sorry for anybody. You know, I always say, like, when I used to go to the downtown Y and there was a steam bath in there, you're in there with groundskeepers and CEOs and judges, and everybody just had a towel on. Everybody's the same. And nobody seemed, I turn out, I'm sitting there with the chief judge of some court and had no idea that he was a big shot. But, you know, when you're out there in the world with a hierarchy of power and wealth and you know, some people do drugs and, you know, like my buddy, and wind up in jail for 20 years, and Rush Limbaugh is going to come out still a multimillionaire, it is a little hard for me to work up sympathy for the guy.
I guess. I see your point on that way.
But I think you're advocating being a better person than that.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, you need to be a better person, and that's how this world can start to be a better place.
I agree. Thank you.
All right, Peter. Bye.
Appreciate it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
101 WRIF is cranking up the rock, live and local. 101 WRIF wants you to get in on the action with the Motor City Riffs Local Music Showcase. Come check out some of the great music coming out of the Motor City. Join 101 The Riffs Saturday, October 25th at New Wave Bar in Ferndale starting at 9 p.m. as the Motor City Riffs Local Music Showcase features live music from some of the best bands in Detroit.
21 and over, welcome.
The Motor City Riffs Local Music Showcase, live from the New Wave Bar on Woodward Avenue in Ferndale, Saturday, October 25th, starting at 9 p.m. from the home of rock and roll, 101 WRIF.
AirTran Airways and Flint ask you,
with or without
the kids,
nonstop flights to Fort Lauderdale for you and Orlando for the kids, or the kid in you.
New Saturday only, nonstop service to Fort Lauderdale from Flint begins November 8th. So after you take the kids to see Mickey and the gang on AirTran Airways flight to Orlando, spend your day sunning yourself on 23 miles of beach, having quiet nights on the waterfront, shopping, choosing from over 3,500 restaurants, sightseeing, or golfing their 56 courses.
Immerse yourself in Fort
Fort Lauderdale.
Spend time with friends, family, or enjoy solitude at sunset.
AirTran Airways. Go. There's nothing stopping you. To make your low fare reservation to Florida or to any of AirTran Airways' 45 destinations, go to airtran.com. Call your local travel agent or 1-800-AIRTRAN. Flint's Bishop International Airport, where I-75 and I-69 meet. You can get there from here.
If you're looking for a unique gift of jewelry, one jewelry store has five times the selection of ordinary stores. Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, has thousands of great gift ideas. The area's best collection of independently certified diamonds, gold and platinum, exotic colored gemstones, designed by Levian, Sea Magic Culture Pearls by Mickey Moto, and the finest Swiss timepieces. Plus, Jared has incredibly low prices every day. To create unique bridal jewelry, choose from Jared's large selection of independently certified diamonds from 1/5 to 5 carats. Priced from $300 to $30,000. Our expert craftsmen can set most diamonds in 1 hour. Jared offers free financing for 1 year. Minimum purchase and minimum monthly payment required. Jared, located at the corner of M59 and the Van Dyke Expressway, on Baldwin Road in Auburn Hills, and on Novi Road across from the 12 Oaks Mall.
Hello, this is Lawrence Allison from Biltmore Properties.
And I'm David Hall from Rock Financial.
Renters, are you ready to move up to owning a new home? Biltmore has homes starting as low as $159,000. A complete home set in our communities that evoke the charm of small-town America, Cherry Hill Village in Canton, and Forester Square in Auburn Hills. A home that you'll own starting at just $159,000.
And Lauren, with Rock Financial's new Smart Choice interest-only loan, on $159,000 mortgage payments on that new home, get this, less than $600 a month.
For more information, look for our Sunday newspaper ad. Visit us on the web at biltmore-homes.com. That's biltmore-homes.com. Or call us at 248-641-3900.
Biltmore, town builder since 1924. Rate is variable and subject to change. Based on 10% down, the interest-only payment is for 3 years with a rate of 3.875%. APR 4.088%. After 3 years, principal and interest payments can adjust to $757, which includes PMI and will adjust every 6 months after that. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Oops, I put in the wrong one. That was my fault, Rick Fox. Stay tuned for Rick at 2 a.m. He'll be rocking you all night long. And 1 a.m., it'll be our interview with Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. GregPalast.com. Somebody, I'm going to read this email in a little while. Says, where is this? Where am I? He says, oh yeah, we learn more. I've learned more from you than everything else combined. Well, and it's John from Inkster. And John, I appreciate that very much. But most of what I know, I've learned from other people as well. I mean, I can kind of put stuff together, connect the dots. What's the old? I'm losing it. Leonard Skinner. Yeah, maybe it must be all those baby blues I'm doing. Now, how could he be that? How could Rush Limbaugh be that stoned out and do his show? Remember when I was saying war on drugs? I can't even drive on drugs. How the hell could I even think about doing a talk show and thinking? Anyways, John writes in to nightcall at WRIF.com. Been listening to you 4 years. Wait a minute, let me see. Listening to you 4 years. He's writing just with almost symbols. Do you think the Bush mob would plant weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and claim they finally found them? Well, I do think the worst of Bush, but I don't think they can do that. I mean, they haven't found any. And remember, it's weapons. There's nothing there. There's nothing, they found nothing. They knew there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That's why they invaded. If there would have been any weapons that they knew they were going to use, they wouldn't have invaded. Just like they don't invade North Korea because, they've got all this stuff. Let me see. Where is that other email, though? Because this is, let's don't use my name. Anyone should understand that Rush hates himself. Yeah. I mean, well, that's oftentimes what that's masking. Now, Matthew writes in to Night Call at WRIF.com. Now that Limbaugh will be in rehab for the next 30 days, I wonder if they will air any of his old shows. Years ago, when Kitty Dukakis was the wife of the governor of Massachusetts, and he ran for president in 1988, Dukakis did, got drubbed by Bush 1. That Kitty Dukakis had a prescription drug problem, and Rush always said she was weak and doubted if she really wanted to kick the habit since she had been in and out of rehab for years. Well, says Matthew, this is Limbaugh's third time in rehab. I wonder if he considers himself just as weak. And that's what is so galling and, brands Limbaugh as not worthy of, well, he's worthy of the minimum amount of compassion that one can do and still be thought a compassionate person. He's not worthy of much because he mocked Kurt Cobain. He mocked Jerry Garcia. He mocked Daryl Strawberry. And he says that drug law violators should go to jail. Well, did I say this is WRIF in Detroit to make this legal? I hope so. Hi, this is Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, it's me, and I think you're quite of a sweepie, actually. And, you know, Rush can make an ass of himself, and I'll be the first to believe that because my mother made me listen to him since I was a young, young teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he can definitely make an ass of himself. At the same time, Rush gives me a different perspective on politics. I mean, let's face it, the whole politics, the news, the newspapers, they're all basically owned, if not anything else, owned by a family. And we get the same news every time I change the channel. Every single time I get the exact same news over and over and over. And then Rush gives me a different perspective. And
well, it's pretty
while
much
I'll admit he makes an ass of himself,
yeah,
he gives me a different perspective. And it helps me think because, you know, the public school system never taught me how to think.
Well, on the other hand, you get this kind of boring corporate news, and then you get the conservative news, like from Fox News and what have you, and then you get this ultra right wing stuff from from like Rush Limbaugh and the hundreds of other right wing talk show hosts, and then you have this little squeak in the back, me, you know, like on Sunday nights. I mean, you don't get the left side of things at all. Where do you get that?
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
The thing is that the news that I get is an extreme on one hand, and Rush gives me an extreme on the other hand. And I happen to think I'm intelligent enough to take the two sides and read between the lines. I mean, it helps me because he is an extremist to the extreme. I can listen to him and laugh. At the same time, I can watch the news and just realize they're just feeding me what the PR guys have given them.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Well, yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. You say you weren't taught how to. I agree with you. You weren't taught how to think in school. Where did you kind of pick up the capacity to do so? I mean, that you think.
Well, I got a lot of it from my mom, but at the same time, I'm extremely Southern, and it was all about being Southern and that you have to think for yourself because if you want someone else to do it, you're going to get screwed.
Mm-hmm. I got you. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You know, these Republicans also, they're very weird. Remember talking about a lot of rage? How do these people rise to the level of prominence that they do? Now, Pat Robertson, the wacky televangelist, he suggested destroying the State Department with nuclear weapons. And he would say, it's a figure of speech. Well, why does it sound like an inappropriate remark in these days when we're worried about terrorism? Now, the First Lady, the governor's wife of Maryland, says it's incredibly important to get the message out to young women. You know, really, if I had an opportunity to shoot Britney Spears, I think I would. That's what Kendall Ehrlich says. She's advocating shooting this 20 or 21-year-old. What does she know? Maybe she got a little older. So there's something about this addiction to violence. We're talking about addiction of, to drugs. But there's also, you think of Republicans, you think executions, wars, threats, this kind of stuff. So it's the stuff of the conservative right. And of course, all these, Muslim fundamentalists, they're all right-wing too. I mean, in a lot of ways, they agree with a strict punitive society that represses sexuality and drug use. And, of course, these Republicans always get caught in these scandals, but that's at least their public positioning. Now, there's a study that's been done. This is on my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. Heavy viewers of the Fox News Channel, this far right wing, they say balanced and fair, neither at all. Heavy viewers of the Fox News Channel are nearly four times as likely to hold demonstrably untrue positions about the war in Iraq as media consumers who rely on national public radio or public broadcasting system. In other words, they watch Fox News and they come out, and not opinions. You can have any opinions you want. You say, my opinion is George W. Bush is the greatest president that ever existed. That's your opinion. That's okay. I mean, I think you're, well, whatever. But if you watch Fox News and then believe that Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons against U.S. and British forces when they invaded Iraq, that's a demonstrably untrue position. And that, you don't have to go through the whole thing. What do they think? Saddam Hussein was directly linked with September 11th attacks. George W. Bush himself said there ain't none. Weapons of mass destruction have already been found in Iraq. World opinion favored the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. This is what heavy viewers of Fox thought erroneously. So if you watch that, you're never going to know. It's not a source for information. It's a source to have, which, again, like Rush Limbaugh, plays upon the fears of fearful people that have an extraordinary level of fear about the world, about other people, about health, all these things. And I remember I was reading that thing about that Republicans have report a demonstrably, an evidently higher number of nightmares than liberals. I have nightmares about Republicans. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Are you with me, my friend? Hello? Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, this is cool. Never been on the radio before.
Welcome.
How you doing?
Doing good.
I just wanted to call. First off, I'm calling from the other side of the border.
Okay, welcome.
In the city of Windsor. I love your show. I think it's great to hear interesting opinions and point of views politically on the radio. I want to call because I have this growing up internationally, I guess you say in a border city,
uh-huh.
Kind of developed like a fear of Americans. Not Americans, but American corporations.
Okay.
And so what I'm getting at is that I just wanted to say that I think it's evident that eventually there's going to be a common currency between Canada and the U.S. and Mexico, and that our natural resources are going to be rather tapped in by the American corporations.
Now, they could be intending that. I mean, NAFTA has been a disaster for Canada, and now Bush is pushing this free trade area of the Americas, which is kind of NAFTA on steroids. Which, in fact, I'm going to go down to Miami. Let me see. I think it's November 17th to 21st. This whole coalition of unions and environmentalists and people like that are going to greet the ministers from the hemisphere that are having a meeting down there, and they're going to have concerts and teach-ins and marches, and it'd really be good as many people listening could get down there as well. That's the kind of thing when I talk about that we can't depend on our politicians, but we really got to depend on on popular resistance to all of this.
Yeah, I I completely agree.
Yeah, and like, you know, in your side of the border, Canadian auto workers have been real strong in trying to oppose NAFTA, well, certainly an environmental movement as well. All right, well, thank you very much. Do call us again. I'm glad you took the time to do so. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Mahasha Orby.
Long
time no speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, I have a little interesting thing. You talked about a perfect cellmate for Rush last week.
Oh, yeah.
You forgot to mention Brooks Patterson.
Brooks Patterson.
Oh, they played golf together a couple of years ago here in Lake Orion at Indianwood Country Club when Rush was the guest of honor for the Oakland County Republican Party.
Huh.
Yeah, they played a big tournament here, and, of course, Rush had an entourage with him. Poor Brooks is in it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess some of Rush's, they must have rubbed off on each other.
Who was I saying? I forgot her name again.
You know, the woman there, Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart, yeah. No justice, no quiche.
But, you know, the funny part of it is, Rush, you know, you gotta kind of feel sorry for the guy. I mean, this guy has had a hard struggle coming up the ladder. After all, he sold hot dogs at a Kansas City baseball stadium. Then he was a disc jockey in St. Louis for a while. And then, of course, you know, it's a big shock to the system to have a big entrepreneur like Papa Bush come up to him and make him a star.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This is a shock to the system. I mean, you know, let's be reasonable about this. You know, it's a big shock to the man.
Well, I wonder how big a shock this is all going to be. Because, actually, what's his name? Michael, I can't think of his last name. Suddenly, the editor of Talkers Magazine. It's a trade magazine for us talk show hosts. And he says he doesn't think this is, in terms of rating, going to hurt Rush Limbaugh one bit. Who knows? I mean, somebody said this actually could make him a kinder, gentler person. Maybe when he gets out of jail...
Well, do you ever notice how these, even like Brooks Patterson, they always have an excuse why they did it?
Yeah, well, that's right. I forgot about old Brooks. He was driving drunk, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was also had some pain, you know.
Yeah, well, me too.
He had some medication. He was taking some medication for a health problem.
Yeah, well, you do that. You do those baby blues and then have a couple of beers. Whoa, man, I can do a talk show. Thank you, my friend.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate it. Here is what Ben writes in from St. Clair Shores. He writes, you hit the nail on the head. Rush is a product of the mass media, which is controlled by a percentage of the upper class. In sociology last semester, I learned of multiple accounts of credible writers from newspapers such as the New York Times and Washington Post getting disciplined for writing articles aimed at exposing the owners of the papers. Right, that's just a big deal in the Detroit Free Press where... Boy, you know, when I don't like people, I block on their names. You know, the guy that wrote Tuesdays with Maury, the sports writer, is on in the afternoons on WJR. He's got a new book out, some schlocky novel about meeting somebody in heaven or something like that. And the Free Press didn't want to give... someone on the paper the opportunity to review it because they thought it'd be a conflict of interest. So they got a freelancer to do it. They turned in the review of this. Who you must? It almost came out to me. They just say his name. So the freelancer turned in this this review of the book by the guy that wrote Tuesdays with Maury's and totally trashed the book. So the Free Press decided, well, we're not going to print this. Right? You don't want to, you know, get their big star. Hey, Rick Fox, who is the guy that wrote Tuesday with Maury? He's a sports writer for the Free Press, and you know, he's got the afternoon WJR show and all that. Damn. One of you know it, right? Call me and tell me. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call. You're on the air.
Hey, Megadiddles, Peter, how you doing, buddy?
Thank you. You know who I'm talking about? Who's
yeah, the... I know you're talking
Mitch
about.
Mitch Albom. Mitch Albom.
There you go. I know. I didn't know if you wanted to say it or not.
Yeah.
First of all, I just want to say I'm an independent, and I love your show totally.
Thank you.
Great show. I just had two quick comments. You know, I want to hear your what you wanted to say about my comments. First of all, I read Bill O'Reilly's book, and have you read it?
No, I'm saying, say the name again. Whose book?
Bill O'Reilly's.
Oh, Bill O'Reilly's book, the new one?
Yeah.
No.
I don't know. I just think because you're giving so much press to Al Franken and Michael Moore. I mean, honestly, I've read the book, and I consider myself a thinker. I hope I am. And honestly, it wasn't slanted left, wasn't slanted right. It was actually a very informative book. I really honestly enjoyed it. I mean, it's not like some right-wing, you know, propaganda. I don't really think he's totally right-wing either, but just I think your listeners would enjoy it. It was a good book.
Well, you know, there's a book out called Treason by Ann Coulter that is...
I don't like her.
All right, she's this hysterical right-wing woman.
I know she is.
And people have gone through her book and looked at her footnotes, and, I mean, they're fraudulent. I mean, she's just made up this case. O'Reilly is a right-winger, and, you know, he poses another one of these multimillionaires.
He gives a lot of voice to the left on his show.
I have to say, I heard his voice for the first time. He wasn't giving Limbaugh much of a pass, but you got to understand, if O'Reilly prays, he goes to bed every night praying that Rush Limbaugh does not come out of recovery, and if he does, he goes directly to jail. Because Bill O'Reilly has a talk show, and of course, at the same time as Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, I know he does.
And he's, you know, nobody picks up on his show.
Well, my last comment, just because I want to hear what your opinion was. I'm going to this next election. I don't know who to vote for. I really don't. I'm not voting for Bush again, because that was the first mistake I made. Howard Dean is so far left. I can't even take the guy. I think he's a jerk. And then, like, you got General Wesley Clark, who I actually kind of liked, but I found out recently that he's been at more Republican events than Democrat events.
Well, here...
And I'll let you go, though, just
well,
to the call. Take care, bud.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, Noam Chomsky. I always spell my last name, W-E-R-B-E, but Chomsky, C-H-O-M-S-K-Y. And he says he always votes for the lesser of the two evils. I mean, at one level, it makes sense if you're going to vote, right? I mean, you don't want to... he kind of disingenuously says, I don't even remember who I voted for in, like, 2000. Well, he obviously voted for Clinton. But he doesn't like Clinton. He has a lot of, you know, all during the Clinton years, he's very critical of Clinton. Noam Chomsky's, a social critic, if you will. And as I said, what's important is that Bush be denied a second term. I mean, I don't know. This country, as it is being fundamentally altered by the economic and political policies of Bush Co. And another 4 years. Here, Roy is listening in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, which means we are streaming at WRF.com. Here's the line on Rush's drug problems. Late 60s, Rush has a cyst on his butt, starts taking aspirin. Early 70s, tokes a little weed, gets paranoid, and switches to Jack Daniels. Starts hanging out with Kansas City baseball players, always a wannabe. Late 80s, gets his third-rate show syndicated, moves up to cheap cigars and 7-year-old scotch. Early 90s, moves up to fat, expensive cigars and 20-year-old scotch. Al Franken writes his book. Rush is embarrassed about being a big fat idiot, which was the name of Franken's first book about him, decides to prove the title wrong by changing the only thing he had control over, starts taking diet pills because he was very overweight. Back goes out from all the years of carrying all the extra weight around. Signs disgustingly big contract, breaks his back carrying his wallet. Back surgery fails, as it usually does, and starts with Quaaludes. Meets higher class junkie and moves up the scale of drug abuse, all because of a cyst on his butt. He says, tell Jolene hi. She may be listening. Some of you will know what that means. And also, that's how Rush got out of, he's a chicken hawk. Yeah, you can go to my site and you can see, you can click on, in the description of him, a chicken hawk. You know, he loves wars, loved the Vietnam War, but said he couldn't go into the service because he had a cyst on his butt. So I posed the question, is Rush a perfect a-hole? Turns out he's not. Yeah, it turns out he's not at all. Actually, you can also go in there and see whether George Bush is an a-hole, too. There's a site for that. There's a site for everything, by the way. Answer those questions. Okay, let's move on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing tonight,
Peter? Doing well, thank you.
Richard Cory is the song you're thinking about.
Oh, yeah, by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
No, Simon and Garfunkel wrote that and played it, I believe.
Okay, We'll have to
take a look. It's on the one where they're walking down the road.
Yeah, right. But there is, if it is,
yeah, it's multiples. It's no problem.
Okay, there also is an Emerson, Lake and Palmer, the song where the rich guy,
Lucky Man.
Oh, it's Lucky Man. That's right. That's right.
And
Lucky
Man.
He
goes off to war. All this neat stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Except that's kind of crazy because rich guys usually don't go off to war. Like I said, they're all chicken hawks and manage to get their butts out of
it. Much different age back in those days.
Yep.
Rush Limbaugh. As a human being, I have compassion that someone has so much pain in his life that he's attempting to escape it at all costs.
Right.
As a person of logic and reason, he should be held to the fire he started.
Okay.
His feet should be held in it until he whines like a baby.
Well, Doug writes in, maybe you would agree with this. He says, the caller who wants to show compassion to that fat ass who says that drug users need to be in jail is what is wrong with us liberals. Time we played hardball, just like the neocons.
Oh, yeah, I know about those people, too.
Yeah, Ken Lay and the slew of corporate crooks who essentially stole people's retirements by creative bookkeeping,
mm-hmm.
and our leader, who was such a coward and had a rich boy's way out of Vietnam, then goes on to quite long. He says, I am seething. I am so pissed. And I try to educate my friends. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But that's about Rush. Why they love him so much and why they care. These people that you call the third that can be fooled all the time,
right?
They're running on a different system in their heads. When they see a cross backlit
mm-hmm.
with an American flag going up, and the bigger the choir, you know, the more they love it.
Yeah, they don't need those. When that goes on, they don't need those products that we're always advertising on this show. You know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
I don't know. I don't want to say.
Okay, but they love this stuff, and the more people that are there, the more they get it.
Yeah.
They're getting a large dose of endomorphins and oxytocins into their systems when they see this. Their hearts swell.
Sure. Where did we see this in the 1930s? What was the name of the town? Nuremberg.
Yeah.
The
exactly.
Nuremberg rallies. Yeah.
Exactly. You're
yeah.
talking right down the line. They yeah. look a lot like, you know, police funerals.
Yeah.
But what happens is these people were told all through the 80s and 90s that they were going to be millionaires
mm-hmm.
by putting away their money in their 401ks, by putting their money in mutual funds and depending on the stock market, while they were slowly but surely being squeezed out of every other money-making opportunity there was. They're all farmed right into the stock market. And then what happens is they're told they're going to be millionaires, and they're shown over a period of years that this is working, over 10 years. It's a pyramid scheme. But it's working. Look, you're going to be millionaires. Then they get robbed. Now, they still believe, they want to believe at night when they go to bed, they're going to be millionaires. And this makes their hearts swell and makes them happy. When you take it from them, it's like taking heroin from a heroin addict. They will hate you, the messenger.
Sure. You know, they've done these surveys, and
yeah.
they ask people, do you think you're in the top 1% of income in this country? 20% of Americans say they're in the top 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And 20% think they will be.
Right. And they believe in it. And they've been shown the charts and the graphs. And they want to believe in that man sitting across the table from them who through the 80s and 90s told them that they're going to be millionaires.
Yeah.
Then when the stock market crashed a little bit, and they lost a lot of their money, they were told, you got to stick with us or you'll lose the rest.
Well, yeah.
And it freaked them out. And remember, they're running on emotion, not logic. Okay?
Yeah, that is really the problem. And it is, that's why I say they're always in this polemic against reality. I mean, it's such a level of denial that it's astounding.
Right. My favorite thing to point out to them is when they say they believe in God, I say, Krishna? Or are you talking about Buddha? Or you know, which God? Only my God. And I tell him, that's megalomania, sir.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in to 313-298-WRIF. Actually, I was reading from Doug here. He said that he's talking about the same thing we're talking about with our last caller, about the unwillingness to face reality. He says, case in point, there is not one person above age 15 that can't tell you about Clinton in that damn blue dress, but only 1 in 10 believes the truth or cares about Bush's military or lack of military career. Go to awalbush.com. You can see that. He says, I shouted as often as I can, Doug, is this real? I have a rolling billboard on my car to try to educate people every day. Is this a figure of speech, Doug, or do you actually have a rolling billboard on your car? Write me back. I mean, this is this is quite amazing. If you do, All right. Oh yeah, here we go. We're getting someone. Richard Corey, originally a poem by Edwin Arlington Robinson, and then I see. Then put to music by Simon and Garfunkel. Have we figured that one out? All right, let's take another call. Thank you, Rick Fox. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, this is Carol.
Hi, Carol.
I thought you'd be interested. Garrison Keillor today said, oh, that explains how he could listen to himself all these years.
Well, there you go.
I had to laugh.
Yeah. I mean, what is up with that? The chief spokesman for conservatism in America is a stoner.
I know. That's an irony. That's almost as weird as watching the Shrub hand out medals to people when he was a deserter.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be AWOL if it was anybody else, but for a year and a half.
Yeah, Bush was gone from his post for a year and a half. In fact, for those of you, well, you know what happens, though, I have to tell you, Carol, is when we start to say things like that, these conservatives, figuratively, maybe some of you even literally, they put their fingers in their ears and they go, la, 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 because they can't deal with it. Here is this symbol of military prowess.
Yeah.
Landing on this aircraft carrier, of course, it's all staged. All he had to do was wait another hour, and he could have just walked on board, right?
Right.
And from a man who avoided service and was able to do so because of his father's wealth. He is Fredo.
His father was the head of the CIA at the time.
Yeah. He was, George Bush is Fredo. Remember Fredo from The Godfather?
Yeah.
The weakest son, you know? And so he becomes a symbol of militarism. At the same time, the Bushco government is carrying out assault after assault on veterans' rights and the current men and women serving.
Yeah, and cut the pay that they get for going overseas and everything else.
Yeah, they're not going to have enough plates. They don't even have enough plates to serve them on until December.
Right, that is really something.
Well, thank you, Carol.
Okay, thank you.
Good to hear from you. And we'll be right back, folks. Hang on.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Don't put it off any longer. If you've ever thought about a career in radio or television, now is the time to call the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. Hey, this is Freeman Scott Randall from The Rep. I went to Specs Howard and look where it's gotten me. I've interviewed and hung out with celebrities at this year's MTV Video Music Awards, flown off to Ireland with a plane load of RIP winners, sat backstage and mingled with guys like Eddie Van Halen, Steve Tyler, and Joe Perry of Aerosmith, Godsmack, and more. I really do have the best job in the world, and you can too. The Specs program is built to suit people who want to pursue a college degree, as well as those people who normally wouldn't think of going back to school. You just can't lose. If you want to enter the workforce quickly, you can complete hands-on training in as little as 8 months. If you're planning on taking the college route, the Specs Howard program may be applied towards a degree at up to 14 area colleges and universities, including Rochester College, which now operates a satellite office on the Specs Howard campus. Call for your free personal tour by October 31st, because their next available morning, afternoon, and evening classes are forming now. Call 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. $59,000. The Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan. This is where you start. It's where I started.
Good morning. This is Ray Vinson of American Equity Mortgage. If you're hearing our message at this time, it's probably because you're at work, driving around, or can't sleep. If you can't sleep, I hope it's not because of money problems, but if it is a money problem, American Equity Mortgage can help. You're not alone. The average household has a credit card debt of $6,000 or more and paying a fortune in interest. You see, if you're a homeowner, you can use the equity in your home to consolidate all your bills and have only one payment. Think about that, just one new low monthly payment. Your equity can be used to pay off your auto loans, credit cards, and get a new low fixed rate on your mortgage. You will be saving hundreds of dollars each month. American Equity Mortgage specializes in homeowners with less than perfect credit. We have helped thousands of people just like you get back on track. You can call our office right now, and a loan specialist will call you first thing in the morning. That's American Equity Mortgage. Call toll-free 888-71-LOAN-1, 888-71-L-O-A-N, then the number 1.
Some kind of evidence.
The new album, 13, featuring the new single, A Sun Doesn't Rise, is in stores October 14th and Mushroom Head on tour this fall. Right now, go to mushroomhead-music.com to see their new breakthrough video. Album 13 featuring the single Sun Doesn't Rise, in stores October 14th and on tour this fall. Go to mushroomhead-music.com to see their new breakthrough video.
Man, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of legendary stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make love as long as you want with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Sex is good. Sex with Maxtral is incredible. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
I'm 35. I've been taking testosterone for about 2 to 3 weeks. I noticed a lot more energy and I'm more upbeat.
I'm 57, and since I've been taking testosterone, I've noticed my sex drive is definitely higher.
I'm 45, and with testosterone, I can keep up with the guys at work who are 30 and 25 and get way past them.
I'm going to be 44. Testosterone has been great for me because I have more desire, I feel more confident, I last longer, and I think it's more satisfying for my wife.
When I turned 37, I started feeling kind of sluggish, but with testosterone, I don't get that way anymore. I swear by that stuff.
Well, I'm 50 years old, and my sex drive has improved, so my wife is thrilled.
Men, find out what testosterone can do for you. Call now and try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. It's completely confidential. Call now. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls.
Why do I keep doing this, Rick? I keep putting in the wrong one. Why? Here, I mean, it's supposed to be... all right, let's see. See if we can do it right this time.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. That's what's supposed to be there. About 25 minutes, we'll be airing our interview with Greg Palast. Greg Palast, investigative reporter. He's going to give us his take on the... to replace Gray Davis out in California. Interesting guy. GregPalast.com. P-A-L-A-S-T. My last name, W-E-R-B-E, PeterWerbe.com, brand new, right down at the bottom. We got the Bush countdown clock, and it shows it's 465 days, 12 hours, 28 minutes, and 17 seconds. Maximum time until Bush is gone, and I wrote under it, let's hope sooner, make it so. All right? Let me see. Whoa, what are all these things up here? Mail? Oh. Without a name, writes into nightcall at WRF.com, which is okay, although I like to know first name and where you're calling from, particularly. Sad and disappointed that you imply only conservative Republicans are criminal. Please point out that as many liberal Democrats are also elitist criminals. Well, I don't want to defend the Democrats, but I don't think there's as many. Eleni in Denver, Colorado, is listening to WRIF.com, streaming the show. We're bad. We're nationwide. Or so says ZZ Top. Last week, I was running some errands and turned on the radio in the car. Sean Hannity's voice came over the speaker. He said, quote, God help us if they win the election in 04. They want to destroy our way of life. What can I say, says Eleni out in Denver. It's stunning to be viewed as an enemy. Well, these are fascists, and beneath all their patriotism and their yuck-yucks and playing country music and all of that, they want to significantly alter this this country. They're counter-revolutionaries in the manner that the Tories were the ones that supported England, that wanted to continue the absolutist rule. And that's what these authoritarians are all about. They love the rule of elites. And, of course, they get extraordinarily wealthy being the flacks for them, being the bullhorns for power. So the fact that people are fooled by them is just extraordinary. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hi.
Unfortunately, we got cut off before I...
Oh, well, unfortunately, too, we have a rule that you can only be on once in an evening. And sometimes I have to kind of unceremoniously cut the call short. So let's take this up when you call back next week. Thank you. Appreciate it. And sometimes people don't understand that. And it's a way that talk shows operate. I've often thought of asking the producer and phone screener, in this case Rick Fox, to say something like, Peter may end the conversation without saying goodbye. Because this isn't, we have to really move this along in lots of ways, and it's not like sitting around at a bar or at our, at one of our homes. So sometimes, you want to say more, but I have to make the call that we got to move on. There was a guy on this insane talk station, this insane FM talk station that became a country station, and Wow Radio or something like that. And and this guy, literally, he would, he said, do you think Rush Limbaugh should go to jail? And you'd say, yeah, I think Rush Limbaugh should go to jail. Thank you very much. How about you? Do you think Rush Limbaugh? No, I don't think he should. I think that he ought to be given another chance. Thank you very much. That was it. They would just, bam, go cruising along. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, this is Doug Goddard. How you doing?
Hi, Doug.
Well, I know you shouldn't use your last name, but anyway, I'm the one with the rolling billboard.
Okay. I read your email.
I wrote the second email.
Yeah.
I drive around, and guys at work, there's a lot of right-wing nuts I work with. I work for one of the big three, and they all think I'm pretty crazy, but I'm a almost 50-year-old, 60s throwback, I believe peace on earth, and I just promote it as much as possible. I've seen death and its destruction and what it can do, and it's terrible that we don't have a bigger, I think the apathy, which what people go along with, Americans either, it's sad, but there need to be just as many of us as there is them, and just as vocal. I think there's just as many of us as there are of them, but we're not as vocal.
No, I agree. Well, it's not that we're... Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it's not that we're not as vocal. It's that that corporate power locks out anybody that has politics to the left of Mussolini.
Exactly. Exactly. I think you are, you know, you are what the doctor ordered. You're my sanity once a week, and I get in all the websites, and I go truth out, and I've got every book. I mean, I would be go over to the gym and get on the treadmill or something and read, Franken's book.
Oh, Al Franken.
Yeah, it just cracked me up, but it was sad because it was true. The man speaks the truth.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, though, Doug. Explain to us exactly what a rolling billboard is. I mean, like they have on taxi cabs?
No, well, more, it's probably more, I don't have the lights, but what I do is, you know, when you sell a car, you see the kind of shoe polish, like, you know, they write $5,000 or less, you know, or...
Okay.
I put them on my back window, whatever's current that week, you know, and I get going down the road, and there's some people go, like during, right before we bombed Iraq, I said, I should stop the war and this and that, and there's...
So your car is a rolling billboard.
Right. A lot of people were giving me the thumbs up.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
When they showed that, and a few people would, you know, pull up beside me and write a note, say, I'm Iraq, you know, and I'd give them peace sign, you know, say, hey, whatever, if that's, mm-hmm. that's what you think. I just seen death and destruction, man, from an early age, and I just hate it. It's almost like I've never thought about leaving this country. My parents came over from Canada and stuff like that in the 40s. My dad went to the service. They died early. It's hard to take, and I just wish people would realize, you know, all these people over in Iraq are, even, you know, little kids are dying, you know. It's just heartbreaking to see that, you know, and I don't think people, you know, we have this homogenized view of the war that's because of the corporate media.
Well, more, and, you mean more a sanitized view of the war.
Yeah, the sanitized, yeah, the homogenized, you know, I mean, it's nothing showing but war is really like, you know,
yeah.
The death and destruction and what it can do to just average citizens, you know, and
Well, I think, you know, some of it is beginning to come through on the media. I've probably heard me that I say I rarely ever watch television news. It's just, you know, it's so empty, and I learn next to nothing. I don't like television particularly. But if I thought I would learn things from it, I'd watch it every single night. Well, I never watch it. But I've been kind of looking to see how there's been like almost a sea change in the media. And to some extent, I was wrong, because I was saying how that it wasn't even a media. It was really a medium, a single voice of power. But it's like blood is in the water now, and they're beginning, the sharks are beginning to turn on Bush. And, I mean, well, they should. Because he's been exposed as a liar, he's been exposed as a warmonger for, you know, for war that never needed to occur. So, you know, good. You know, he deserves everything that he gets, and hopefully it'll be removal from office for having lied to the American people and lying to the world. Doug, I got to move on though, so keep rolling on, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. And are we going to line three? Is it okay? Hi, Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. My name is Mike. I would sincerely like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your show. And, you know, I think humanity also should help. Should thank you.
Well, you know what?
What you do is great.
Thank you. You know what? You know what? At some level, I just ought to say thank you very much. But what you're saying really says more about the state of the media in this country than it does about me. There should be... Like 150 of me.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I think there should be at least 50 of you, one in each state. I mean, it's a shame that you're only in Michigan and Ohio or wherever. I mean, I know we web broadcast now, but I can say I wish you were in some of these Republican states to speak some truth there, you know, and I think things may turn around a little bit to and help us out. The reason I called, actually, is I took a took your advice finally. I've been listening on and off for approximately 2 years now. I did recently stop watching television, which really helped my my mind, I guess you could say. And I also picked up Bowling for Columbine last night, which I got, I have to admit, I think everybody in America should watch that movie. You know, and the question that I have for you is, after watching that movie, I can't see a valid counterpoint to anything that Michael Moore said. So what I'd like to know, I guess, from your perspective, is what exactly is the right side saying about what he says in that movie?
No, they say that it should be, it should never have won Best Documentary, that it should have been in general Best Picture because it was all fiction. And, you know, Michael strung a lot of stuff together in order to make a point. And I mean, what's his point? I mean, he doesn't, you know, they're saying, hey, he wants to take away our guns. He doesn't say anything about that. And there, in fact, he says that a lot, that countries with a lot of guns, like Canada, don't have the kind of homicide rate that we do. And you know, he it's particularly relevant for us because a lot of it is about Windsor and Sarnia and Ontario and Detroit, right?
Oh, absolutely. And a beautiful point he made by that. I mean, that was absolutely excellent. I guess the secondary question that I would have for you then at that point is, I would like to think of myself as a patriotic citizen, but what would not make me want to move to Canada at this point?
Well, it is a peaceable, decent country. And when people say, well, you know, this is the best country in the whole world, I think what that disguises is how many fundamental problems that we have. You know, this country is always in turmoil, and it's gotten even worse so with the ascension to power of these right-wingers. And so that there's crisis after crisis after crisis. This doesn't occur in a lot of other Western industrial countries. It does some. But what, you know, to say, I don't know whether we're the best country in the world. How about if we say, what's the potential for this country, and how's that potential not being met? I mean, in what I always say over and over again, we're the wealthiest country in the world with total aggregate wealth, and yet we have the highest percentage of poor people than any Western industrial country. So that's obviously something way wrong. So rather than saying we're the best or not the best, or we're number one or number four or whatever, why don't we look at some of the problems that we have and try to solve those? But like I said earlier at the beginning of the show, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, the Sean Hannitys of the world, they think the only thing wrong with America is that liberals exist. That's it. If you say to them, what's wrong with this country? They'll say, oh, people like Bill Clinton and Jesse Jackson and Peter Werbe and, you know, I don't know, they put me in the same boat. But you know what I'm saying? Them, it's wonderful. It's because, you know, they've made tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars by sowing discord and strife and scaring people and cuddling up to the powerful and wealthy, and have become wealthy themselves in the process. So,
absolutely, and I'm disgusted with that completely, and it just. It keeps going and going. Of course, you know, you talk about it week in and week out. And like I said, I just wanted to thank you again, and humanity should thank you.
Well, thank you, Mike, for thanking me.
Hey, thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Let's see. Lori and Warren writes in, kudos to the guy with the billboard. He had the rolling billboard. She says, I got an anarchist bumper sticker. Well, cool, I guess. I think so. Let's see. This is actually from Doug, who says he writes, on top of that, he's got a lot of anti-Bush bumper stickers, which he sells. I use shoe polish and cover the windows with anti-war message, such as Bush is lying and our kids are dying. Bush Cheney, the religious right posse. Found to date, zero weapons of mass destruction. Fire Rummy the dummy. Veterans benefits cut by the chicken hawks again. He says he did get through. So he never gets through. But you know what? Shoe polish does not seem the way to go. And also here is Dave, your friendly heating and cooling guy, who I'm going to save your your email address, Dave, because I always get heating and cooling things, and I remember this guy, Dave, said that he would do the work, and then I always lose this. I'm going to, Dave, this is an article. This isn't a letter. I'm going to have to, I don't know. I don't think I can get to this right now. I'm going to read it. I'll read it over myself later. All right. Where are we going? Line four. All right. Hi, WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hello there, sir.
Hi.
I've been listening there for quite a while.
Thank you.
Matter of fact, I think the battery on my phone went dead.
Oh.
So I had to switch to another one. Yes, I understand Russia's went through quite a few poopas, as we might say,
yeah.
You know, with the LPGA.
Yeah.
And the blacks being bred
The LPGA, what is that, another drug he's doing?
No, that's one of those
ladies
golf course things.
Professional Golfers Association, yeah.
Right.
I was joking.
And he's consistent. He is consistent. And he believes in what he's saying.
Well, that, I mean, you know, so did, I don't know who, you know, a lot of bad people.
A lot of bad people?
Well, I mean, Hitler believed in what he was saying.
Right. So did, well, we won't bring in Schwarzenegger on that.
Governor Gangbang.
But, we're going with his ideas and his beliefs, and he's consistent on what he believes in, and he wants to put it forward to the people.
Yep.
And now he's being honest about his drug problem and that. And
so what should we do? What should we do with him?
Well, I think one of the biggest things we can do in America right now is to get cheaper drugs brought into America from, like, Canada.
You know, I mean, like, you mean prescription drugs. You don't mean, like, marijuana.
No.
Prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's what Ozzy Osbourne said. He said, I used to have a drug problem, but then I got enough money.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. And it, I mean, it is literally criminal. In fact, almost felonious to the point of the deaths and ill health that has been caused by the extraordinary rate of profit demanded by American drug companies. And we see drugs manufactured in the United States that you can buy cheaper in Windsor. What is up with that? I got to get one more call. Thank you. Please call us again. Hi, Night Call, and you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, get your opinion on something with the Bush thing going on.
Sure.
Let me preface this by saying I was employed by a local company for 17 years, and recently I'm a part of the unemployment line. Now I hear that Bush is trying to do something about companies being able to decide whether they want to pay overtime or something like this?
Now, what did happen, and I think this got defeated in the Senate, one of the assaults on workers' rights, I mean, sometimes I just say that, but they wanted to recategorize what constitutes overtime because, you know, there's federal statutes that control that. And rather than leaving it to the tender mercy of the employers, and so the Bush administration, rolled back overtime. But I believe the Senate said no to it. So,
Thank God. Yeah.
Because
I'm looking at going back to work. You know, I'm not a college person. I went to high school and graduated, but I worked my way for 17 years up through a company and made a decent wage. I didn't get rich from there, but I was living, you know, and now I'm looking at going back to work at probably $9 an hour at the most.
Well, that's Bush's America. That's what he's got in store for all of us. And, you know, except for the third of the people that can be fooled all the time, I guess they'll be rewarded by having a high income. And the other two thirds, because poverty, you know, people in poverty are growing, middle class is shrinking, wages are essentially stagnant for the last 30 years almost, and Bush is presiding over massive job loss, massive deindustrialization.
Right.
Yeah, that's not very pretty, but it's got to be the people, the resistance, the opposition. If we just sit back and take it, we could probably say it would be our fault, so we can't let that happen. All right, I got to go, so thank you very much. I appreciate you being our last caller. Stay tuned, though. We have a couple of very interesting interviews, and we'll talk next week.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the RIF Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the RIF on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the RIF Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Mike Potty's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked with rock and roll tennis pro Luke Jensen. It wasn't long before we all start talking about his brother Murphy.
What's up with your brother? Just because he knocks up Robin Givens doesn't know what it means.
Oh, man.
That was actually a cheap shot, and I'll apologize for it. Murphy did impregnate Robin Givens. That is true.
Luke's beautiful baby boy, 3 years old.
And is she now your sister-in-law?
She is. No, they are not married.
Are they together?
No, they're not together.
Ooh. Oh. Was it even close?
No. Not even close.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101
WRIF.
Oh, you're shouting at me.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Oh, who's your boy?
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
It really rocks.
Now,
begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
Riff.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
I think, by God, Bush can't finish his job. He was aimed to take care of his dad's problems. Didn't finish that in 91. And he damn sure ain't got this sumbitch finished now.
No, no, it's going to take a long time.
I mean, you know what I'd do, hell. I'd split that son of a bitch wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd use them bomb planes and bombs, and I'd have everybody scared to look up.
but you know, the thing of it is, after all is said and done, we still don't have Saddam Hussein. Can you believe it?
I don't know they're supposed to have his sons, but...
Oh, Del, you don't think they got his sons necessarily?
Who knows whether it's his sons or not.
Did you see the pictures of them?
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of them, but all them son bitches look alike. If you picture one and turn him sideways, he'll...
and the best radio website in the world, WRAF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRAF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with dimes.
Okay, there was an issue that, as far as I saw, never really made it up onto the radar about Arnold's relationship with a fairly unsavory character.
Yeah, named Ken Lay, the guy who ripped off everyone, including Michigan, everywhere else. This is the chairman of Enron Corporation, which was, you know, basically a bunch of power pirates that ripped off billions of dollars and then imploded into bankruptcy. I mean, their frauds finally caught up with them. But it's not just Ken Lay, but what happened was that back, you know, we're so shook up about the women that Arnold was fooling around with. I'm even more concerned with the boys, these power pirates that Arnold was fooling around with. He was got together secretly in a hotel room in Beverly Hills in May of 2001, meeting with this guy who was at that very moment, you know, ripping the people of California off blind. If you remember the so-called power crisis, we now know it was a whole manipulated criminal conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
This was the band. This was the capo di capi of the power pirates. The state of California, in fact, brought a suit against this guy. And here Arnold's having secret meetings with him, and he won't tell us what it was about. And I got to tell you, I have some information about what it was about. I mean, you have to understand, this is like, if you can imagine, someone running for chief of police and meeting with Carmine Gambino beforehand.
But wait a minute, Greg. Arnold says he doesn't remember this meeting.
He doesn't remember this meeting. Well, you know, I mean, that's pretty unusual because he was meeting with some pretty heavyweight people, including not only Ken Lay, but the convicted stock swindler Mike Milken. You would, in Beverly Hills, amnesia doesn't count. Here's the guy who's prized himself on Total Recall.
Yes.
So give me a break, Arnold. In fact, there are four pages of minutes from this meeting. I want to give credit to San Francisco Chronicle for uncovering that. Talking about undercutting the investigations of these power pirates at both the state and federal level. So, you know, Arnold's talking about how to undercut state investigations. He's supposed to be the cop. Hey, mm-hmm. man.
But now,
he doesn't remember.
Well, I mean, here's what I'm asking you to do, essentially, is explain to us how you know he was there when he says, in other words, I don't know whether he says...
Give me a break, Arnold. First of all, if he forgets, there's an internal Enron memoranda, which talks about, which not only says he was invited, but then goes through the meeting and notes that he was, in fact, there and in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just pretty darn weird. I mean, it's just inconceivable, in fact. So in other words, he's either lying or he's lost too many neurons to serve the office, I think. And that's a serious business. I mean, look, I'm we go back and forth about his sexual misconduct and where he was putting his hands. And I don't want to make too light of it because, you know, I mean, that was pretty scary for some, you know, big slob. And when I say slob, let's get real here. When you see, you know, that Schwarzenegger on the screen, that's the old body double. We've now seen, you know, if you saw the picture of him in People magazine, in his spandex, man, he looked more like the Michelin tire man, you know.
I did
this. You got this chubby guy, you know, putting his hands all over your nipples or something. You know, it's pretty creepy. I'm not going to belittle it, but what I'm more concerned with is that it seems like Ken Lay and the big corporations of California were putting their hand up his dress, and he loved it.
Well, why would he be there? I mean, he couldn't even have had the California governorship in May 2001 as a glint in his eye. He had probably had a glint in his eye.
No. He was considered one of the guys. But they weren't sure. They hedged their bets. He was there with Reardon, who they thought was the most likely candidate for governor. Arnold always has been for years being whispered around as of a candidate that they are preparing, you know, the next kind of Ronald Reagan, creation, this kind of Franken candidate, you know, where they where the powers that be put them together. In fact, that's what I'm really concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just electing Arnold that worries me; it's the characters around him. You know, it's the Dr. Frankensteins that put the monster together. He likes to show little Maria and the Kennedys. But in fact, the dangerous thing is that he's brought in the old Pete Wilson gang. Now, these guys were about not only incompetent, they're dangerous. They're the ones that created the California power crisis. They're the ones who've destroyed California's budget. And so you got this weird thing in which the team that actually took down California, destroyed that state's finances, they blame the crime. They do the crime, and they make Gray Davis through the time, they put in their boy, their front man. And what I'm afraid of is that, you know, Arnold works from scripts, you know, and that they're writing the script. That's the real dangerous thing.
Well, what can he do in some ways? I mean, you got a Democratic legislature, both houses. You got a Democratic judiciary. The whole executive branch is filled with Democrats. It's a Democratic state. Is this going to work for Arnold or for California?
The evil thing about it is that I'm afraid that others are going to back off. They're going to say, look, if we take on the corporate big boys and the power companies, they're just going to put up endless money against us. You know, after Arnold, they'll, you know, God knows who they'll put up, maybe Spider-Man.
I hadn't thought about that.
So I must admit, I am meeting my buddy Martin Sheen next week in California. I'm telling him he's got to run for
something.
Run for real. My campaign theme for Martin Sheen, who's President Bartlett of the West Wing, is Sheen for re-election, you know?
Yeah. So this does fit in, Greg Palast, your book is called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Was it bought again?
Yeah. That's the other thing. People say, well, Arnold won because of his celebrity and because dissatisfaction. The Wall Street Journal, bless them, finally, of course, a day late, because Arnie was their candidate anyway. You have to look at the numbers. First of all, the spending for the recall was three times the spending for against the recall. Arnold swamped Davis in spending. I mean, swamped him like 4-5 to 1. So you're talking about, and against Bustamante, who was once the recall succeeded, then there's this weird balloting in which Arnold was up against this guy Bustamante. It was like 10-1 in money. I mean, this wasn't an election. This was an auction,
mm-hmm.
which is why I call the book The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, because we're moving to auctions. These guys are buying it up, and they're talking about, weirdly, Peter, they're talking about, well, now politicians better watch out because this is the new populism. This isn't the new populism. This is the new corporatism. You got some big players writing some big checks and buying themselves political office. If they have to put, you know, the Terminator up as their front man, or if they got, you know, Spider-Man or whatever, they'll do that. But who's the money behind these guys? Who owns these guys?
Well,
that's what we got to be concerned with.
Greg Palast is my guest, and I'll keep spelling his name because he has a wonderful website. It's gregpalast.com, last name P-A-L-A-S-T, gregpalast.com, and he's the author of the best-selling the best democracy money can buy. One of the spins on it, or interpretations, if you will, is that this does not bode well for George W. Bush, simply because Arnold is a Republican. You probably have seen this. And what that wisdom is that people are in a dump the incumbent mode. That contradicts a little what you just said about how this
election was bought. That's the official line from Karl Rove in the White House. And I can't believe the New York Times and other papers picked up this line of jello thinking. It's complete baloney. Arnold himself let the cat out of the bag 2 days ago, the day before yesterday, when he said, look, I'm here for George Bush. He said this. He said, if I win, the Democrats are going to have to spend $15 million to keep California Democratic. It's a Democratic-majority state. It was considered a stone-cold lockup for any Democratic candidate running against George Bush. Now with Arnie in there, he's correct. The Democrats are going to have to spend time and a bag load of money just to keep a state that should have been theirs. And, you bet. And I'm very, very, concerned. Again, it's not even, hey, if people are, revolting, whatever the heck that means, if people are in revolt, that's one thing. But I think it's the money that's in revolt. They're saying, gee, we found a way to do another coup d'etat. And take a look at this, man. I have to look at the latest numbers, but it looks like the number of people who voted against the recall, that is, voted for Gray Davis, is slightly more than the number of people who voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger. So what is the meaning here? In other words, more people voted for Davis than voted for Schwarzenegger, yet Schwarzenegger replaces Davis. This isn't democracy. This is a kind of complex, legalistic, purchased coup d'etat.
Let's talk a little. I've been mentioning your book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, several times. I'd highly recommend it to my listeners. But now there's allegedly this big competition between the books of the left, of which I would include yours, and the books of the right, the hysteria of the Ann Coulters and the Bill O'Reillys and what have you.
I like Ann, I shouldn't say it. I was going to say something about biting the pillow, but that's okay. I'm not the type of person that would make a comment like that.
Okay, I had one too, so I'm glad if you suppressed yours, I will suppress mine.
That's right.
But
don't quote me on that.
Okay, but we have this, all of a sudden, Al Franken's book is number one, Michael Moore's book, Dude, Where's My Country, just came out, Joe Connison's book, Jim Hightower's, Molly Ivins. There's tens of millions of people out there that are thirsty for something other than the Hightower calls the Bush Co. lies. So,
what's happening is that, the mainstream press doesn't get it. We're locked off the air. People are running out, buying books that are telling the truth. Greg Palast's book, Joe Constan, Jim Hightower, and so on. Al Franken, my friend Michael Moore, et cetera. And yet, look, even my publisher, which put out, by the way, Greg Palast, Hightower, and Al Franken, you would think, gee, they would say, wow, look at all these progressive dissenting authors. They're making us all the money. Instead, they opened up a new right-wing imprint.
Right.
Selling Mike Savage. Even his mom won't buy a book from that guy. it's like, forget it.
Well, what about when we see who's buying these? There's this whole now controversy of the dagger in the New York Times, and that is that if you have a little dagger, typographical dagger, after the book title, it means that there was mass buying. And the contention is, I mean, I've heard this, and I always tend to think it's so, just because I'd like it to be, but people like O'Reilly and Ann Coulter and their...
what they're doing is that they've got their buddies buying up the books and mulching them. I mean, it's the right-wing groups are literally buying up thousands of Ann Coulter books, because who can read that stuff, I mean, you just can't read the stuff.
They buy them in mass.
Yeah, they buy thousands, and then they give them away or make them premiums. I mean, and in fact, the problem we have on the progressives is that we sell a lot. If you're in the Detroit area, you'll see my books in the front of the independent bookstores, which aren't recorded by the New York Times.
Hmm.
And it's a very difficult thing. We're fighting to be heard. They've got the airwaves. But at least the internet is free and we can get our word out. That's why I do encourage people to go to my site or Michael Moore's site and try to get try to get some information so that you could at least talk to your, you know, half-wit brother-in-law in Utah who still thinks Dick Cheney is some type of patriot.
Hey, listen, no need for me to be modest. Go to my website as well. My last name is W-E-R-B-E, PeterWerbe.com.
I do. I go to your website. In fact, I think we're linked together.
Yes, we are. Mine is pretty ugly.
We're kind of internet going steady.
Yes. Mine's very ugly. It's getting a redo. I got some wonderful people working on it. But speaking of the media, I just saw this kind of depressing study. I think it was Zogby said, oh, there's only 14% of us that says the media is too conservative, and that 45% of us say that it's too liberal.
Where do you find these guys? I mean, I just went out to Hollywood, by the way, and met with the liberal conspiracy that runs Hollywood. These people couldn't run a popsicle stand. And you know, I mean, I won't name names, but they're the well-known, Democratic Party celebrities. And you know, excuse me, what liberal media? O'Reilly liberal? Savage liberal? Joe Scarborough liberal? Does Al Franken have a show? No. Does Michael Moore have a show? He's bigger than any of these guys. They won't give him a show. They won't let him back on the air and on the American airwaves. You know, I mean, come on.
Do people realize that Michael Moore's Stupid White Man was the best-selling hardcover book of 2002? That's amazing. That's
overwhelmingly.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Overwhelmingly. And yet... Can he get on the air? Can he get a program? Forget it. I mean, Al Franken is going to be maybe messing around on one of the alternative radio networks. But, you know, it's very, very difficult to break through. And Joe Connison, who's a really sharp guy, I hope you have him on at some point.
Yeah, I already did, yeah.
You know, are they going to let us on? No. So what we're going to have to do is seize the radio towers. The next communique.
That's the Ramones have a song called We Want the Airwaves. Greg Palast, there was actually another study that was sort of heartening on one hand, and that was done by, I saw that in the Baltimore Sun. I don't know if you saw that, that said Fox News listeners, heavy viewers, were four times as likely to have inaccurate information about Iraq as were National Public Radio people. I mean, these are the people that watch Fox and come out of it thinking that Saddam Hussein used weapons of mass destruction against invading American troops, and it kind of devolves down.
Well, I understand that he was considering, beaming reruns of Friends at them, and I don't know who can tolerate that.
Well,
there is a limit.
Speaking of Iraq, I don't think Bushko is going to get out of this too well.
I just hope we get out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the heavy thing, which is that what I'm learning, we had a guy, Jay Gardner. He was the general we sent in to kind of run Iraq after we took over. And he said, there's going to be elections in 90 days. That was a long time ago.
Right.
I'm still waiting for the election returns. You know, we can argue back and forth about whether it was good or bad to go in there. Forget it. That's a case closed at this point. However, why are we still there? And it looks like we're there simply to prevent an election,
mm-hmm.
You know, which is kind of what Saddam Hussein was doing, too. We're there to prevent an election. Why? Well, I've got some inside documents from the State Department showing we're there. We are there for the purpose of making – the State Department document says we're going to sell off Iraq's oil fields and sell off their other businesses. Now, you know, if and that can't be done. You can't have an elected government in Iraq and sell off their oil fields because no elected government in Iraq, no matter who you get in there, is going to allow you to do that. So instead, our guys are putting their lives on – the line, as far as I could see, for something really a bit strange, which is to make sure that ExxonMobil can bid for the oil field. That's no joke. I didn't know, look, I'm not one of these cynical people that says we went in there for the oil. But on the other hand, it's pretty clear we ain't leaving without it.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Election coming up next year. George W. Bush obviously going to be the front runner for the Republicans. Vice President, heard some rumblings about Dick Cheney out of there.
Well, I mean, he's out of it. Whether he's out of there is a different issue. I mean, the question, I want to go back up on what you said. When you said he's the front runner, and I know you were saying that with a little tongue in cheek, but
right.
But dig this. The man is raising $160 million to run in the Republican primary, and he has no opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because it is illegal to spend money in the general election. So he's going to spend it in the primary against no opponent. Now, that's just plain out trying to circumvent the law. If you did that with finances with a bank and played games and said, well, I'm not really, you know, moving the money here, I'm moving, you know. That's fraud. That's fraud. No one's calling this guy on it. That, you can't do that. I'm sorry. The law says you can't spend money. You can't say, well, I'm really spending it in the primary. Against whom, buddy? And that goes back to what I was talking about before. The best democracy money can buy. It's not an election that we're heading into. We're heading into another auction. And that's what I'm very concerned about. Now, maybe Cheney, or he may want a promotion, Cheney, from vice president to, you know, after all, he's kind of running Iraq. He may want to be emperor of Mesopotamia.
There you go.
I don't know.
If you had to make a prediction, I mean, part of the problem is the Democrats. But if you had to make a prediction for November 2004, is Bush going to get a second term? I mean, that's a hard one.
Again, I think it's the money question. Can votes overcome money? I mean, most people are pretty darn unhappy. If you consider where you were when Bill Clinton left office, we had peace, we had prosperity, we had high employment. Things are looking pretty smart. And what do we have now? We've got a horn beeping out at Second Avenue. I'm not going to tolerate it. We've got.
I have not heard. Actually, you're the first. I was telling Joe Connison this when I interviewed him you're the first person I've heard where they haven't heard a siren in back. That's how I always know you're in New York City.
That's right. It's like I can't even fall asleep anymore unless I hear the sound of smashing glass against pavement.
All right. Well, George W. Bush lost the popular election last time around. In fact, there's bumper stickers out that say, re-defeat Bush. He was saved from ignominious defeat, proper defeat, I'd say, by his buddies, his father's buddies on the Supreme Court. And a lot of it revolved around all those hanging chads and also no more hanging chads. We're going to enter the 21st century. We're going to do computer voting, and that will end the controversy, right?
Oh, God. Look out with computer voting. This is the result of something called the Help America Vote Act, which Bush signed. And as soon as the Bush family tells us they're going to help us vote, we better look out. I mean, this is dangerous stuff. Computer voting is an invitation to mischief. In fact, you know, the problem is that they said that the punch card machines in California were bad because more than 1% of the vote is destroyed and never counted because of technical errors. The computers, they know, already have a 2% error rate, but that's what they know about.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking to the experts, like this guy David Dill, who's the head of computer sciences at Stanford University. He's saying this is the end of democracy as we know it, but I guess the beginning of democracy is the Bushes like it. We have seen it. Look, I got to tell you straight up, this is a black-white issue. The messing around with the votes is very serious. In the year 2000, in the 2000 presidential election, 1.9 million votes, let me repeat that, 1.9 million votes were never counted. They were listed as spoiled and unreadable. And overwhelmingly, those were black votes across America. Harvard Law School did a study and determined that it was mostly black voters out of 1.9 million votes not counted. Democratic votes overwhelmingly. I mean, the Democrats had that election locked. If you actually counted every vote in every state, it was a lockup election. And now, and the Republicans know that, and therefore they are now going to help us vote.
Well, I was
going to
say, why wouldn't computers then end the whole question of illegibility?
Because we've tried them out, and we've had, first of all, the companies like Ivotronics that are selling these machines. I mean, they were started by guys like Senator Chuck Hagel, who's a Republican. You've got you've got basically politically fixed corporations producing the machines, and even the head of the other big seller of machines, a guy named the Diebold Corporation, the chairman of that company actually said, well, I want to do anything to help the Republicans win in Ohio. Well, wait just a second. He's running the vote counting machines. Excuse me. What's happening is that we're privatizing vote counting. Pretty nasty stuff. And it is very dangerous. We tried it in Florida, and what did we see? You know, Florida, after hanging chads, said, oh, we're going to fix it. Catherine Harris bought a bunch of computers, and what happened was is that in the black precincts, kabang, the computers didn't work. Hmm. And it's always, by the way, easy to say, oh, them black people don't know how to deal with computers. Baloney. That isn't what happened. That's just not how it works.
Well, yeah, I was actually, I usually put this as a last question to people that are astute observers as of how things are now, as you are, Greg Pallas. And I remember at the end, I'll put the same question to you that I put to Jim Hightower, and I said, so you must be pretty pessimistic, pretty cynical about anything being able to change. And he said no, and he talked about how many people that he saw around the country in this, you know, his speaking tour that goes on forever. How about you? I mean, you essentially said that that it's the golden rule, he with the gold rules, that we may even be denied a proper counting of votes once again because of the control of computer voting. Maybe we should just all, you know, move to Canada? Or? I mean, some of my listeners would love it if I did.
I'm what I call a cynical optimist, which is that, yeah, I mean, I do see reaction around the country. Like I say, more people voted for Gray Davis than Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's actually a little bit of a glimmer of hope. Let's not lose track of what happened yesterday. The other thing is that, you know, you can't fool all the people all the time. Now, maybe you don't have to, but we've been here before. Hey, Richard Nixon was president of the United States. Just think about that, man. And you know, we ended up with Richard Nixon, but we still had some pretty good music coming out of America, and you know, we survived it. We've had some pretty creepy times with some pretty creepy guys in charge, and somehow have gotten over it. So, you know, I'm not that worried. You know, history moves in these weird cycles. On the other hand, these guys don't seem to be taking any chances about letting the democratic process do its thing. So I guess what we're going to have to do is vote early and vote often.
As I used to say in Chicago, Greg Ballast, as usual, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. You can go to Greg's website. And by the way, through Greg's site, you can buy a lot of the other books that we've mentioned as well. It's Greg Pallas, P-A-L-A-S-T.
That's GREGPALAST.com. Go there and, you know, read the latest and send me your wicked thoughts. I want to read them.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Peter. Bye.
times and often comes up, Gone with the Wind. I got to say, I've never seen it all the way through. I don't even know why. But I read a book recently that made me want to see it. It's called The Wind Done Gone, and it's by Alice Randall. And Alice Randall is an amazing person that the more I read about, the more I was impressed. First and foremost, well, let me welcome her first to our microphones. In fact, welcome her home to Detroit, Michigan. Alice Randall, you're a Detroit native, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I was born in Detroit City, 1959.
That's wonderful. And Alice Randall is a singer-songwriter. She's the only African-American woman in history to write a number one country song. And she's had more than 20 songs recorded, including two top 10 records and a top 40 as well. It's a pleasure to be talking with you in your hometown. And you're going to be talking about the paper edition of your book just released, The Wind Done Gone. And Alice Randall will appear at the Bookbeat bookstore. That's in Oak Park. It's Greenfield, and let me see, it's in the shopping center. It's right out of my mind, but it's at 11 and a half.
Is that Northland?
No. It's at, I'm sorry, I'm going to get us all confused. It's 10 and a half and Greenfield in the Lincoln Shopping Center, the Lincoln Plaza Shopping Center. There we go. See, I always think I don't have to write things down, but I do. And the Bookbeat bookstore, one of those unusual places. It's an independent bookstore. Well, Alice Randall, welcome. And tell us about The Wind Done Gone and its relationship to Gone with the Wind.
Well, in a way, my book rebukes and scorns the other book. One of the critics said my book is as if Prissy slapped Scarlet back. But it is a book that's meant to make you take another look at another book.
Okay. And remind people, most of us, we just, unless people have seen it recently, they're, you know, they think of very romantic, you know, Civil War setting, Clark Gable saying, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. And yet there were some people in the background that were just kind of backdrop for this great drama of these Southern aristocrats.
And that were the silent slaves on Tara. One of the things that I'm trying to do with my book, Mammy is perhaps the most famous mother in all of American literature. She happens to be a black woman and a black mother, and she is a very negative image of the black mother. And I'm trying to, in some ways with my book, reimagine Mammy in a way that reflects how black people have read Gone with the Wind and how the book Gone with the Wind damaged them.
Now, most people have not read the Margaret Mitchell book, Gone with the Wind, nor have I, but I read a description of it recently, and it's not quite, it has some very, very, much, much more disturbing aspects than even the disturbing aspects of the film. But yet you read the novel, what I read by your biography here, when you were 12 years old, so that means, what, in 1961, right?
No, in 1961 I was two.
No, 1972. Okay, I'm putting some years on you.
You're putting some years on me. No, I read the book in the late 60s when I was 12, and or almost 70, I think. And, you know, the book, people don't know this, but to this day, Gone with the Wind is the most published novel in the history of publishing.
Really?
So, in fact, lots and lots of people, I think the number may be 40 million people have read this book. There, no other book is printed except for the Bible in the English language.
Now, why would a young black woman in the city of Detroit, in an era that was marked by such militancy, such righteous demands for full rights, read a book like that in 1970? It seems almost inconceivable in some ways.
Well, it is true. It was a strange circumstance. One, the movie was being released, as you recall, that for a long time the movie was not available on television. And I think what's interesting about Gone with the Wind, and I found this from letters I've received from people from all over the country, Gone with the Wind, when it was published in 1937, really damaged, I think, the psyche of black people and haunted a lot of black people. And so when the movie was being re-released, my mother actually brought the book to my attention. And, you know, I don't know why she did, but she did. And I was extremely disturbed by the relentless use of the N-word and the presentation of the Ku Klux Klan as a positive social organization.
Which is not in the movie.
Which is not in the movie. Both of those things have been sanitized out of the movie.
David O. Selznick said, in defending it, he said, I did not make an anti-Negro movie. That was his statement. He was quite, in fact, quite taken back by the criticism at the time, even there in the late 30s.
But it's really interesting. interesting that during the time he was making his movie, the NAACP and black organizations across the country, perhaps 100 black newspapers, editorialized against it and asked him not to do it. So for him to say that he did not think he was making an anti-Negro movie was certainly his opinion, but there were many black people at the time who disagreed with him.
And what, there's a, now, who was the, who played Mammy? I'm forgetting since I didn't see it.
Hattie McDaniel.
And she wasn't even allowed to come to the opening because of segregation in Atlanta.
Exactly. And when she received her Academy Award, she wasn't allowed to sit at the same table or to make up her own speech as the other authors, yeah. I mean, as the other actors.
So in a way, could we say this is Alice Randall's justifiable revenge?
I would like to think that. I had a grandfather who was from Detroit, who lived in Detroit. He was born in Alabama. And there was a story in our family history that he once struck a man down with a crowbar for cursing in front of his wife because he wanted her to be treated with so much respect. And my grandfather adored his wife. And in 1937, my grandmother was a grown woman with five children of her own. But how could my grandfather defend her, his wife, against the book when he couldn't read or write? And so these many years later, I am defending that same grandmother against the book.
Well, what would we see in The Wind Done Gone as opposed to Gone with the Wind?
Well, first of all, my book is a complicated and literary novel about a novel that is sort of a piece of propaganda. What you find in my book is an intelligent black woman is at the center of it. And that woman, Sanara, who is a woman who is born into slavery and lives into freedom, is a woman who could not exist in the world of Gone with the Wind because Gone with the Wind doesn't include any intelligent black characters, and it doesn't include any mulatto characters. You also find in my book a vision of the world that is inclusive of blacks and whites, because almost all the white characters in my book turn out to be black, and that's my way of inviting everybody under the quilt if they will recognize their inner blackness.
Yeah.
So the other book is fundamentally racist and divides forever black against white. And my book presents a world in which the color line is ultimately erased.
Well, the whole concept, of course, of blood. I mean, there are African people that that have the racial characteristics that we associate with people from Africa. On the other hand, we have so much of mixed race in this society that I remember a guy, I heard him on television. I can't remember what he was doing. He said, my ancestry is 30% African, 40% Irish, 20% Choctaw and something else. And he said, in other words, 100% black. So there's these social constructions of race, and yet they're very powerful and very easy to identify with, even with people who are of mixed parentage.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what we are examining, the social constructions of race. And what did Miss Mitchell argue was elemental to blackness? She argued that intellectual inferiority and incompetence were the nature of blackness. Also, she also argued that asexuality and afertility were the nature of black women. When she created Mammy, unattractive, unmarried, and unloved, she was asserting a kind of identity on blackness. That's an identity I am exploding in my book. And on the other hand, for example, my main character, Sinarar, has lupus. That is, in fact, what is the proper role of blackness in taking into consideration blackness? It is, in fact, true that disproportionate numbers of black women have the disease of lupus. And so I am arguing that there may be some traits associated with blackness, but stupidity and incompetence are not those.
Hmm. Alice Randall is my guest, and her book, The Wind Done Gone, a New York Times bestseller, is just gone into paper. It's available from Mariner Books, available everywhere. Oh, I didn't see it. It says also, yeah, I forgot about this. There's the story behind this, the unauthorized parody. I can't believe I didn't ask you to tell that already, that the people that held the copyright on Gone with the Wind weren't too happy with this, were they?
They were very unhappy with my book. But fortunately, in America, you do get to disagree with people, and the book is happily published. They went to court, in fact, and sued my publishers for $10 million. We have now that has been resolved and settled, and we are all moving forward.
And what kind of parallels are there in terms of the storylines? I mean, what was their argument? That essentially you had appropriated Martha Mitchell's storyline.
Their argument that it was an unauthorized sequel, which is, in my opinion, a completely erroneous idea. My book, a sequel would exploit the characters, and my intention was to explode their characters.
Mm-hmm.
A sequel would work from the love people had for the characters. My target audience were really people who had hated Gone with the Wind. and felt injured by it. My view is that Gone with the Wind is a poison, and my book is the antidote to the poison.
You know, and mostly I like to talk about issues, but I just hear something that I think maybe bring out those issues a little more. It almost sounds still like there's, you know, like a trace of anger still, even with the success of your book, even with your capacity, you know, to write and to express yourself and the success you've had. Is that true? Is there still this underlying anger at Margaret Mitchell. Martha Mitchell, who was that? That was the Attorney General's wife, this nutcase. Yeah. Is there still underlying anger at this?
Yes, there is anger. I hope there is some forgiveness, too. But there is anger because, you know, my grandmother, Georgia Minnie Randall, died in Detroit, was buried in Detroit with Miss Mitchell's book, unrebuked and unscorned. She lived most of her adult life with the view people had of black women and of heavy black women defined by Miss Mitchell's diabolically racist text. So, yes, I am angry because there are injuries that book did that I cannot write because so many of the black women the book damaged died before I had a chance to write my book.
What do you make, and maybe I'm opening myself up for something, but what do you make of the fact that two of the most popular movies in American cinema are just fundamentally racist, Gone with the Wind, and then even worse, of course, Birth of a Nation, that still may have grossed in today's dollars more than any American movie or close to it, which, again, exalted the Klan, and a movie that Margaret Mitchell, the author of Gone with the Wind, had seen, I think, 10 or 12 times. I mean, it was so loved by whites in this country.
Well, it's a very interesting issue because I think of the country as an Afro-Celtic country. I think of our constitution as an Afro-Celtic constitution. What did the founding fathers have? They had the close observation of slavery in a British constitution. So I think the nature of the American identity is black and white, of all American identity. On the other hand, the history of our country has been to project upon the darker brother, the black brother, the doubt and insecurity of a nation. And so it does not surprise me that two of our, you know, these movies that are lauded are movies that tell that very potent mythology of the black as the other and the dangerous one. But the times, you know, as I say, they are changing, and I think they have changed a great deal. And I think one of the things that's been most wonderful for me is another category of people who have come to treasure my book and write to me are whites, including white Southerners, who say, I never thought about it this way. Thank you for causing me to see. And that even older white people, in many, many cases, are willing to look again, look anew, change their view, and say, I cannot believe I love that. And so I think that is very, very optimistic. It's been wonderful for me to see how the book has been embraced as being illuminating and as validating. As that phrase I gave you about Miss Mitchell's diabolical racism, that was written to me by an 80-year-old black man who had been a former principal, and he said he'd been waiting for decades for someone to put down on paper some of the things were in my book.
Alice Randall, author of The Wind Done Gone, is going to appear at the BookBeat bookstore tomorrow, May 20th at 7 p.m. And BookBeat is on Greenfield at 10.5 Mile Road in the Lincoln Plaza Shopping Center. Irving Howe, who was a Jewish intellectual who passed away, he once said that even in the warmest Gentile heart, he thought there was a cold spot for the Jews. You have that sense about whites?
I mean, no, I know that's in fact, one of the things I like to point out is I think that Margaret Mitchell was far more racist and evil than most white people, that I think better of white people than Miss Mitchell. So I think she was particularly racist, and I hold her accountable for that particular racism. No, I do not think that most people are that peculiarly and particularly racist.
No, good. I mean, I
honestly don't believe that. That's why I find fault with Miss Mitchell, and I hate the criticism that people say, well, everybody felt this way in 1937. I said, no, they didn't. I look at William Faulkner. He wrote Black Domestic Servants around the same time. His Dilsey in The Sound and the Fury is a black woman without education. She's ignorant, but she is very intelligent. She's a completely different domestic servant than Mammy, including she has a name.
Mm-hmm. Speaking, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, a name indeed. Speaking of that period, certainly the racial attitudes of that period, with a few exceptions, were what we would call today and label correctly as racist. And yet, people of that period, the whites of that period, just loved this film. They loved it for its romance. They loved it for the scope of it. And yet they were able to pretty much ignore the background. I've seen stills from it where there's hundreds and hundreds of African-American people and the slaves. And they're like, as I said at the beginning of the show, they're just sort of like the background. Do you think that the rich
money as it could in that particular case?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have done better and people have done worse.
Alice Randall, you live in Nashville now, and I always considered a southern town, having lived in Detroit all my life, and yet your family came from Alabama, went to Detroit, you're back to the South.
Well, I never left the South. I would say I was born in Detroit, Alabama, because the part of Detroit where I feel like I grew up, most of the people were first-generation Alabama immigrants, and so it was a lot like Alabama in the little part on Hazelwood, the street my grandmother lived on when I was little.
Yeah, actually, I know the area. And at one point, I was a social worker. And some of these areas, when the Chrysler Freeway started coming through, being built, I was in charge of relocating people. And at that time, I realized how much those roots meant, because people had, just like Europeans in many cases, had brought their whole towns to areas. That people in these, is that what happened in the area where you lived? Hazelwood and what?
No, I don't even remember this, but it was 2727, maybe Hazelwood.
Okay. But people had brought the Southern culture in terms of the connections and the churches and cultural groups, brought it up intact from the South.
Absolutely. There was even, people may think this is a joke, but there was even a watermelon truck that came down the street every, in the summertime, along with their normal popsicle truck, selling slices of fruit. It was just, it was a very Southern experience. You know, every morning, God sent, there was skillet cornbread being made in the kitchen. It was definitely, there were things that were not of the South about it, but it was fundamentally a Southern experience, my Detroit childhood.
When, let me ask you this. When this book has enjoyed such critical acclaim, it's been on the New York Times bestseller list, any talk of it being made into a movie?
There's been talk of it. To this date, I have not. This is a very traumatic experience publishing this book, and I like to turn that question around and ask you. I keep on being asked everywhere, is it going to be a movie? Or people say, I want it to be a movie. And as my daddy used to say, time will tell.
Okay. When you're going to do an appearance, as we've been saying, at the Book Beat bookstore.
Yes, and also the Detroit Public Library downtown on Tuesday.
Okay.
At 6 o'clock at the main library.
6 o'clock at the main library. Good. And when you speak to different audiences, I assume that you've probably spoken to predominantly white audiences, predominantly black audiences, and mixed audiences.
Yeah.
What's the difference when you speak to people about your book, The Wind Ungone?
Well, it's interesting, and I don't think that there are that many significant differences, except for when I do speak to black audiences, there are so many people who say, tell me stories about how they felt damaged by Gone with the Wind, or say that they have been awaiting this book. Whereas in white audiences, I more get comments that the book had surprised them to new insights, that they had and provoked them to a new consciousness or to sort of self-criticism about occasionally how they could have loved the book. I rarely get, I've only had a few black people across the whole country who've told me that they had loved Gone with the Wind. But I have had a few. Whereas I do get some white readers who said that they had once loved it and have now fallen out of love with it.
I was thinking, when you're, your objection to the portrayal of Mammy in Gone with the Wind, and I just was kind of thinking, I probably couldn't even name them all, the very, very awful stereotype presentation in American cinema of African Americans on the Amos and Andy show. What was his name, Lightning or something like
that?
Yeah,
and but you would have to go a long way to get anything worse than Prissy in Gone with the Wind. And as I like to say, and one of the things I say when I go to in front of an older white audience that I think might not be sympathetic to my point, I say, if you had an entire plantation full of black people, would you hire someone as dumb as Prissy to work in your house?
Yeah.
And they realized immediately, no, that that was an artistic choice Miss Mitchell made. In fact, the person who was being the black domestic servant would have been the most intelligent black person they could find. The only way you could believe Prissy is to believe that every single black person is so stupid that that's the best that they could get. And everyone knows that that's not true.
Alice Randall, most of your career has been in as a singer-songwriter, and this is your first novel. Have you written other books before? I noticed it said your first novel. I'm not familiar with...
You know, I am a Harvard graduate. I graduated from Harvard with honors in English and American Literature in 1981. And then I spent a lot of time as a songwriter, not so much a singer-songwriter, but as a songwriter. I have published other articles. I've published way back from before I graduated from Harvard. I published for Washingtonian Magazine, a variety of magazines. I've worked for newspapers. So I've done a lot of writing work over my life. I've also had a chance to write some film scripts and television scripts, and I've had one movie of the week produced for CBS. And so I've been a professional writer all of my life, and I am formally trained in terms of literary criticism at Harvard.
So. Mm-hmm. Alice Randall has worked on adaptations of Their Eyes Were Watching God, Parting the Waters, and Br'er Rabbit as well. And was this whet your appetite for writing more novels?
Definitely writing another novel. I'm at work on another novel. And, in fact, my new novel has a big part of it is set in Detroit. And so I'm thinking about Detroit City this time.
Can we sneak out any more details from you?
No, but you're the only people I've told that it really does involve Detroit. And so and I'm trying to... Detroit is a fascinating, and it was the Detroit of my youth. I find Detroit of the 60s was an absolutely fascinating place that in some ways it seemed to explode in and of itself. But I'm interested in capturing some of that lost world that I actually found to be very glamorous.
Well, good. That means we're going to talk again.
Yes, I hope.
All right. Alice Randall, my guest, the author of The Wind Ungone, the unauthorized parody, An Answer to Gone with the Wind. Alice Randall had to go to court to win the right to even publish this. And she'll be in our town at the Bookbeat Bookstore. That's Greenfield at 10.5 Mile in the Lincoln Shopping Center tomorrow, May 20th, Monday, 7 p.m. And also at the Detroit Public Library downtown at 6 p.m., right?
On Tuesday.
Right. Thank you. Alice Randall, it's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure to be with you, and I'm excited about being back in Detroit.
Thank you.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
When the mechanic told Mom that old Bessie's engine was gone, well, she didn't know what she'd do.
I wanted to punch the guy.
On her pension, a new car was out of the question.
Sure, tell the world.
I took her to Credit Union One. They have 5-year, 3.99 annual percentage rate financing that's perfect for used cars, trucks, RVs, motorcycles, you name it. To see the look on her face.
Oh, gag me.
Well, it made the payment very affordable for her.
Yeah. So I got my little red convertible and rode off into the sunset. The end.
Mother?
Old Bessie? Who came up with that car?
Leave my wife out
of... She probably picked this music, too.
3.99 financing on used or new 1998 to 2004 vehicles at Credit Union One. Based on credit history, subject to qualification, it must include direct deposit or online application with automatic debit. Based on 5-year loan, payments would be $18.41 per thousand borrowed. Other rates and terms available. No down payment to qualified buyers. Rates subject to change without notice. Apply online at cuone.org or call 1-800-451-4292. Credit Union One, where you matter. Member NCUA.
The Cosmetic Surgery Center's Dr. Pierce and Dr. Cole have helped thousands of WRIF listeners achieve amazing results with improving their bodies through state-of-the-art procedures with liposuction and tummy tuck. You can look great in or out of those skin tight jeans.
You've worked out hard, but you still have that little pouch of fat that just won't go away no matter how low-carb you go. Or maybe your figure took a beating from having kids. Don't let parenting penalize you if your workout isn't working out or if your body is just busted after that last baby. Do something about it. I'm Dr. Albert Pierce, and it's time to talk breast lift, tummy tucks, and liposuction. With tummy tucks and liposuction, we can get rid of that bit of fat that just won't go away. With breast lift, we can bring your favorite twins back from the deep south. We will tighten the muscles, narrow the waist, smooth the skin, and minimize stretch marks. Call the Cosmetic Surgery Center now at 1-800-523-3149, and your waist won't waste any more time.
Call the Cosmetic Surgery Center now at 1-800-523-3149 to schedule your free plastic surgery consultation with Dr. Pierce and Dr. Cole. Both surgeons are board certified and will always recommend the least
invasive procedure that will get maximum results. Call 1-800-523-3149 or visit them on the web at piercemd.com. Gentlemen, the doors are now open at the Pantheon Club. The Pantheon Club features topless entertainment for 18 and over all the time. They're open Mondays through Saturdays, 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. and Sundays, 7 p.m. until 2 a.m. At the Pantheon Club, there's no dress code required within reason. Hey, we know times are tough. The economy's tight, but boys will be boys. So to help you out, here's what we want to do for you.
Mondays through Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., there's no cover charge. All well drinks and bottle beers are only $3.75. And everyone who walks in the door will get a free couch dance from one of the Pantheon Club's many beautiful girls.
On Sundays, all draft beer is only $1.75. At night from 7 p.m. till close, all well drinks and bottle beer are only